Steve, I wish you could see how relaxed Wendy is right now. I've never seen you this way. You are as relaxed as can possibly be.
Turns out I like getting touched.
Yep.
Yeah.
We all knew that.
Yep.
That's nothing new to us.
Renee, who used to have a part with Steve on another radio station.
Was she a former producer?
I want to say, I don't know if she was a producer. She did something behind the scenes for Steve. Was a producer? I don't know. But she was in, and it was made clear that she has the ability to massage people. You took her up on the offer, and now you seem very, very relaxed.
Well, let's go, Daddy-O.
Yep. You ready now?
Yeah.
Okay. welcome to the show. I'm Bill. That the relaxed woman over on that side is Wendy. We're at 312-981-7200. If you want to call in, we'd love to hear from you. You can text in as well, whatever you're in the mood for.
Aren't you totally set for fall? Because really, these last couple of days have been just awesome.
No. I was thinking yesterday that of the four seasons, and this has always been my entire life, fall is my least favorite of the four.
My favorite.
Is it your favorite?
Oh, Bill.
Here's why. Because when I think fall, I think to myself,
winter.
I've got 9 months of school ahead of me before I can play outside again in the summer. You know, the weather here, it just doesn't, it's not conducive to year round. It just isn't. We have a lot of bad months. The summer, even though it's hot, you can do stuff outside. There's stuff to do outside. But once it gets to fall, you know, I got 9 months ahead of me until I can just go out and play every day.
I have mentioned my apprehensive anxiety. It sounds like you're suffering from a little of that. Just enjoy fall while it's happening. Don't worry about what's coming on the other side of it.
It's just such a huge ladder to climb.
Look to Christmas. That's what I do.
Right.
Oh, my
God.
No,
I do that.
Dylan has already put together a Christmas mixtape.
Oh, wow.
He's early.
Quite a ways off.
Fall weather is perfect. And then you have Christmas. It's the stuff after Christmas you have to worry about.
Yeah.
No, my birthday
in February. Well, yeah, there's that highlight, yes.
Which I don't really care about my birthday anymore.
Really? Because you just brought it up 6 months away.
I know, because you think you're gonna be excited. Oh, it's my birthday. But really, birthdays don't really... I don't dislike them, but, you know, before it meant a lot.
Right, because as
really
you were growing
gifts,
up, each birthday parties. Afforded you more... Yeah, 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 yeah. And now it just means...
Will you go to Chuck E. Cheese with me on February 12th?
I have something that day, but we'll find somebody. But the thing about the summer is, even though it does get hot, you can eat outside, you can play outside. There's just always stuff going on outside. The days are nice and long. It doesn't get dark until really nice and late. But then once you get into fall, you start to go, oh, here we go. Everything's falling off the trees. And
we did a Snyder family reunion at our little beach club in Southern Illinois, and when I was checking the weather, it says sunset 7:42.
I know.
And that, it was 9 o'clock before.
And that's quickly diminishing.
I know.
Right before our very eyes.
It's so nice. You can go home. You don't have to go see people. You just get under a blanket.
Make pot roast.
Yeah, eat chili.
No, that's not
I love
me.
Fall. Plus the Bears play.
Woo! Yeah.
Bill, you got to turn this around. You got to turn that Bears frown upside down.
I would go summer, then winter, then spring, and then way, way, way below that fall.
Because of the Bears.
They contribute. They do contribute. Because like in the summer, there's baseball every day. You can watch baseball every day. And many times I do. I'll either watch a little bit of the game or I'll listen to a little bit of the game. But then in the fall.
Hockey.
You do have, that's on my pros list. If I was doing a pros
colors,
and cons.
Crisp it, nights for a nice walk with the dog.
Is it because they call it fall?
Yeah, it's the only season that's a derogatory verb.
Right.
Autumn, guys. Just change it to that.
I'm not rich enough to say autumn. You rich people, you can call it autumn.
Either way, you'd rather say autumn.
Right.
Just say either or either.
I just say or. I can't be bothered with the rich people words.
Yeah, we're Midwesterners. I do a double take every time I hear people say either.
I know. Don't you get, even though you've been out of school for years and years and years, this time of year, don't you just get all like jittery, like, oh, I got to start getting stuff ready for school. I just get that, even though it's not me, it's my kids, but I still get that weird kind of, oh, I got to sit through classes for 9 months.
I'm excited to get the kids back on a schedule. Michael already started. He started Monday. Dylan goes back tomorrow. Last night, go to Target. Jimmy Mack goes to get all the school supplies for Dylan.
Yeah.
Nothing like being last
minute.
Boy,
that is last minute.
totally sold out of everything at Target.
Yeah.
I had to go to Walgreens.
Are you surprised by that?
On the corner of Ticonderoga and Loose Leaf.
That's the one you go to?
Yes.
That's the number two Walgreens.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
That is the best pencil known to man, yes. The Ticonderoga.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm ready for the kids to go back to school. They are not, but it's just a rite of passage.
But how do they balance it? Like, they were staying up all night and getting up around noon, right?
Yeah.
All right, so how do they go from that to getting up at 7 a.m. for school?
Mom and dad get up at 6:30 now.
Is that what it is?
Come on.
Yeah.
Get up. That doesn't get old.
I always, like, that first month of school, I was just useless for the first two or three classes because I was doing kind of what they were doing. I wasn't sleeping until noon, but I was sleeping until 10 or 11, and then all of a sudden you have to get up at 6:30 or 7, and you're like, ugh, my body's not ready for this.
Yeah, it's going to be a rude awakening because Dylan's been pulling all-nighters just because it's like, I only have 2 days left.
I know.
I said, okay, well.
Did you keep doing, like, toward the end of summer vacation, I was, like, whatever I was doing, I'd go, oh, this is the last time I can do this all summer. This is the last time I can do this all summer.
You're such a downer, man.
Well, it's just, I love that 90-day period so much, and then it's gone for 9 months.
Do you remember the old days when we would go to school after Labor Day?
Every year.
It's
I never
really
went to school
foolish.
Before Labor Day.
Because they go and, you know, they start things, yeah, but the first week is always kind of a blow-off week of school.
Right.
Not in high school. Michael's had homework already.
Already?
Yeah.
Wow. That's fast.
And then, but then you get this little break in Labor Day. Why don't they just wait?
That's how it was for us. I don't know what they're getting out of it by starting 2 weeks prior to Labor Day, but for
allowing for snow days and strikes?
Is that what it is? It's got to be, right? It was always, as soon as I saw the ads for the Jerry Lewis telethon, I went, oh, it's the summer is over. Jerry Lewis is here to take summer away from me.
Hey, lady, back to school.
I know.
And then I'm trying to think when we got out. It was like the second week of June, because they get out the end of May or first day of June now. So
we got out somewhere between June 6th through 8th at our school,
oh,
at our
really?
Grade school. It was always, yeah, whichever was most convenient for them.
Wait, we had it easy. We didn't have as much homework. We had a shorter school year, it seems.
I know. History class was shorter because there wasn't as much history.
Good point. we got a pencil war going on. Kevin, you like a different pencil than Ticonderoga?
Well, the best pencil is obviously the Faber pencil.
I'm not familiar with it.
Well, if there was a small movie in the 70s called Animal House. That was made at Faber College, and Faber was famous for the inventor of the number two pencil.
Oh, that's right. Wow, good memory.
But do they make them in real life, or are we just living in a fantasy world?
Sure they do.
I think they do, yeah.
I never heard of that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for remembering that, Kevin. Appreciate it.
All right.
I will look that up.
I thought he must be an ardent pencil fan to physically pick up a phone and call in and go, yeah, the Ticonderoga is okay, but...
Yeah, Faber-Castell, the world's oldest pencil manufacturer.
Mm.
Boy, that was a great discovery. And is it just me, or do you like the smell of pencil lead?
It's okay, Steve.
Do not laugh at me, Mr. Paste-Eating Bertrand.
I was just going to say, I like the gentle way the wood gives between your teeth.
There's nothing worse than grabbing a pencil that somebody has chewed on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right, we had to find out why school was starting earlier. Cheryl, you had the answer for us?
Yeah, it's because of all the standardized testing that takes place a couple times throughout the year. You lose at least 2 weeks of instructional time due to standardized testing.
Oh, testing, schmesting. We survived
it?
Without it. We had the Iowa Test of Basic Skills.
Right.
That was it.
Well, now it's the PART test, which is a partnership for assessment of readiness for college and careers.
And everybody's against that.
Third grade. Oh, totally, but we still have to do it.
Against it, why?
Are you a teacher, Cheryl?
Yes, I am.
Okay, because they're silly tests and a waste of curriculum.
Oh, they are? Yeah.
Explain, Cheryl, why people are trying to get them removed from the school districts.
Well, tell me why you're testing a third grader for their assessment for their readiness for college and careers when they're 8.
Okay, yeah,
good
that
point.
Makes sense. It's
I mean,
a little premature.
I tried to take the fourth grade math test, and I gave up on the third question. I mean, it's really, really beyond the scope of what most school districts are teaching.
Yeah.
And in order to prepare the kids for the test, you have to spend so much time. I've always thought standardized tests are pointless because it's not an indication of what kind of student you are, what kind of learner you are. It's just how well you take a test.
That's absolutely it. And some kids test well, some don't.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, people don't.
Yeah. And all the added stress for the kids. I'm sorry, I know they say it doesn't matter, but to a kid, it's like, oh, we have park tests all week.
Yeah.
They do think about it.
Well, and I also think that school shouldn't start till after Labor Day because there are still schools that are not air conditioned.
But they're changing that, right?
Not in the district that I work in.
Oh, in the suburbs, because I know Rahm Emanuel's gone out of his way to make sure that there's air conditioning in the public schools.
Yeah, well, and I work for a public school, and we
still don't have it.
Yeah, suburbs don't have it, and that's really hard.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Cheryl, thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl.
I'm hearing so many different things. Bertrand was just in my ear.
How'd you feel about that?
I kind of liked it. I got goosebumps.
I think that's a new feature. When I talk to Kevin and hit the wrong button, you can hear me.
No.
Yeah, but it's not supposed to happen on the air.
It didn't. It was just in my ear.
Yeah. And did you hear Siri talk?
Yes.
I have my phone off.
Yeah.
And I wasn't touching it, and all of a sudden Siri said, I don't think so. Bertrand, quit talking in my ear. I was so relaxed a while ago.
What happened?
I don't know.
It all unraveled.
I didn't even touch this
phone.
Right,
right, right, right.
I wonder if it's repercussions. I dropped it in a porta potty.
No, that happens to me all the time.
Really?
Yeah, my wife's name is Sharon, so if I say, hey, Sharon, what's going on? I didn't do it this time, but a lot of times Siri will jump in.
Hey, Siri.
All right.
Oh, yeah, there she is.
There it is. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, we're talking about school. For some reason, we can't figure it out. School just keeps starting earlier and earlier and earlier. It used to start right after Jerry Lewis's Labor Day telethon, but once they took Jerry Lewis out, the schools went, what the hell? Just start school now.
He's not doing it anymore?
No. No longer a contributor.
That was one of your favorite shows to watch.
Loved it.
I know. You would come in and report all the crazy stuff that went on.
Oh, I'd stay up so late into the night and watch it every year.
Now, we heard it's because of the park testing. You lose a couple weeks in curriculum, so the school year goes longer. Michelle has another theory, or perhaps the truth. What's going on, Michelle?
Yeah, hi. Up in the northwest suburbs, for the high schools at least, they started taking finals before Christmas break. Because back when I was in high school, we would have Christmas break, come back for like a week or two, and then take finals. And I don't know if the teachers didn't like that or...
That's what we did, too. I don't know if every school was like that, but that was kind of standard for a lot of schools around here.
Yeah, so someone either didn't like that or thought it'd be better and maybe help test scores if they took finals before Christmas break.
I bet that helps.
That kind of bumped everything up a little bit.
I mean, I know that kids, even high schoolers, because I work with Bill every day,
yep.
Even adults get excited for Christmas, and sometimes you can't focus. Mm-hmm. But it is nice to get that out of the way and then breathe a sigh of relief and go on your couple-week break.
Yeah.
Right. And then it trickled down into the elementary school where we're at, because if a parent had a kid that was in high school and in elementary school, their schedules were 2 weeks off, so we could go on vacation in the summertime. So...
Yeah.
About 2 years ago, our elementary school started, we started last Wednesday, so it kind of starts trickling down to the entire district, I guess.
That does make sense.
So you're not a teacher, you're a parent. Are you excited that your kids are back at school? Be honest.
Very excited.
See what I mean? It's like such a relief that the family can get back on some kind of a schedule for once. It's really good to have that happen.
I have younger kids, so definitely everyone needs a schedule. So we're back in business.
Thank you, Michelle.
You know how I've heard you say this, actually. I was going to say I'm sure you've heard people say it, but I've heard you say it. The phrase, the kids are kind of ready to go back to school. There was never a year ever that I was ready to go back to school. If somebody said to me, hey, roll the dice, and if it comes up even, you get 3 more months of summer vacation, I'd be rolling the dice every time. I'd loved it.
You know, I have said that, and Michael started his senior year, and he wasn't excited to get back to the school part of it, but
yeah.
He was excited to get back to the social end of it, and it's senior year, so he was kind of ready.
I think I was always ready. I loved
school. Were you really?
Yeah,
I love school, too, but given the option...
Well, I asked Dylan that exact question.
Just laying around and playing baseball and riding bikes and stuff?
I said that, and Dylan just got a new bike, and I said, you know, aren't you excited to get back to school? And he goes, why would I be excited to get back to school? But he did seem a little excited when he got his schedule, and then I said last night was the school shopping.
Yeah.
That's, it's ready. It's just time.
Oh, I know.
And I've been bothered because Jim works from home, so he can kind of pick his own hours, and the boys were off all summer.
Right.
So I've been the only one up in the morning, and I am glad to see them out of their beds and up and at them.
Yeah, I guess. But I just, like, the concept of somebody being bored with summer vacation, and I always saw, like, my mom's friends would always go, oh, he is so ready to go back to school. And I go, how does that happen?
That's what a parent says.
Yeah, maybe it's different with the kids if you hear what they have to say.
There wasn't some excitement for the first week of school.
There was, but not even close to the excitement of just playing baseball all day and having the summer. I mean, I loved school. I really enjoyed school, but of the two.
Yeah, but that first couple days getting back, then it's the grind. But yeah, the first couple days is pretty darned exciting.
Sure, because you see a bunch of friends you haven't seen. Yeah, I get that.
The smell of a fresh school year.
I love
that smell of books.
Paste on your hands.
Pencil lead.
Yeah. Little pink powder.
Yep. Wait,
oh,
what?
That's when people puked.
Right, the magic dust?
Yeah, which really, I mean, it's bad enough. And I have that reflex, like if I see it or smell it, I'm throwing
up
also.
Yeah. The fluoride treatments you'd get.
Right.
Oh, yeah, they still do that at the dentist, but the school doesn't do it.
That was brutal. That was absolutely, that really should have been illegal.
I don't think I had it.
They would march the kids in the cafeteria and mass.
At school?
Yes.
We never had fluoride treatment.
We didn't do it, but I know the public schools near us did, but we did not.
I went to public schools my whole life.
And you never had that?
I went to my dentist for tooth stuff.
Right.
It would stuff your mouth with cotton and then, you know, 150 11-year-olds trying not to throw up on the floor.
I never, ever had that happen.
Oh, I still can taste it.
I liked the eye test where you would look in the thing and you had to tell which way the rungs of a chair were facing, right or left.
Wait, Steve, were you a student or a prisoner of war? I can't remember which.
I was briefly a prisoner of
war.
You
were for a little while.
Pietone had invaded Mantino.
You're not supposed to mix school and dental, are you?
No, you're not supposed to. You're never supposed to. All right, we need to take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then we have more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Can I just quickly publicize? On our website right now at WGNradio.com, there's a photo gallery that you need to see to believe.
It's back to school. That's what they did.
Yeah.
Various employees. How come you didn't send a back to school photo to put on the website?
You know, I don't have any of my pictures like from when I was growing up. Those are all at my dad's house. I don't have any of them at our place.
Yeah,
so
my
they
sister
always,
has all of
does
mine,
Does she have
too.
All yours? So they always have great ideas. You know, I don't know who comes up with the ideas, but
Stephanie.
Every month there's a, is it Stephanie
it
Menendez?
It seems like it.
There's always a photo gallery up, and it always involves old pictures and I
like your first day back to school is this one.
Right.
Sometimes it's on Father's Day and Mother's Day. It's a picture of you with your parent,
yeah.
Preferably as a little kid, but it doesn't have to be.
Right.
I
don't have access to any of those. They're all at my dad's house. I don't have them at any of them are at my house.
Here's an idea. Why don't you go visit your dad?
He charges me now.
For the pictures or the visit?
The visit is a $10 flat fee, but then it's 50 cents per picture. That adds up quick. I only get 20 bucks a day, Wendy.
I know, and I felt very sorry for you yesterday because, was it yesterday you didn't have money?
Yeah, on Monday, because Terry had been out of town all week, and she does. She gives me $20 a day, and I can do whatever I want with it. It's a really nice situation.
Yeah, but you have a little thing going because she leaves it on the dresser for you, and it makes you feel
like it feels tawdry.
Yes, I was just going to use that word.
I like it because it feels like something,
something I'm worth a $20
dangerous
bill.
Has happened. Right. And I've suggested that she could tip on that, but she said that there's no reason to, that the 20 flat is fine. But
she
it
just
wouldn't.
Honestly every day puts a $20 bill there.
Correct.
Don't you have a debit card?
No, I do not. Because I'm an impulsive buyer. I see stuff every day that's ridiculous that I go, I would love to have that. And I would buy, if I had a debit card, I would have that.
Well,
I can't
what is, like, give us an example. What'd you see yesterday?
A pinball machine.
Okay, you don't need any kind of.
But if I had a debit card, I would own that pinball machine.
Bill.
I'm telling you, it would be, when she explained to me that it's better for us for me to just have $20 a day, every word of it, like usually there'd be some debate, but there wasn't any debate. I go, yeah, that's true.
So she sat you down and she said, Bill, I think maybe if we just...
This is how it's going to be. That's
Let's
what she said.
Limited well, you to a $20 bill a day.
That's a it's, lot of money.
But it's when you say it that way, it sounds like she's some sort of a czar, and I'm, you know, one of the downtrodden in her world. No, it really I really do have a problem with buying things. Like I just anytime I see something, I go, that would be fun to own, and then I buy it, and that's out of control.
But other than the Happy Lobster truck, when it's out there, where it's $17 for a lobster
it's
roll,
that's totally what I was thinking about.
But right. He has leftover money, so do you then at the end of the week have some extra money?
No.
You spend $20 a day.
Yeah, because sometimes that's gas, sometimes it's lunch, sometimes it's both.
You buy your gas out of your $20
yes.
Really love it.
Yes.
You are just interesting. Can I just say that?
Do you go hungry on your gas days?
No, because I'll put in $10 of gas, and that still leaves me $10 for lunch, you know? So that's fine.
$20 a day is a lot of money.
Can't get gas today. It's lobster roll day.
Right. You'll see my Jeep pulled off on the side of Lakeshore Drive, and you'll know as you pass me, well, he probably got a lobster roll today because he doesn't have any gasoline.
I don't spend $20 a day.
Well, see, that's what I mean. It seems like an equitable amount, doesn't it?
It seems like a lot. She should give you $10 a day. Oh, good.
Static.
Sorry.
Radio static.
I'm sorry.
Don't say that. I had to fight for 20.
You're so cute. All right, back to the WGN website.
All right, if you go to the WGN radio website, they currently have a photo gallery of some of your favorite WGN personalities and some that you don't like. And one of them, and it's the back to school photos. So it's your favorite WGN personalities. Like you see a 12-year-old Amy Guth, for instance.
And they show a picture of that, and then you try and guess who it is.
Right.
Guessed almost everyone.
Right. So then they show a little fella that I say to myself, well, I don't know who that kid is, but he loves the bicentennial.
How about it?
whoever this little fella is just goes nuts for the bicentennial. This kid enjoyed the 200th birthday of our country.
And was a big fan of Mo Howard, evidently.
His haircut is, it's like he said, make it look a little like Mo Howard, a little like Pete Rose, and a little like Nicholas from Eight Is Enough. Right? That's the haircut.
It is. And I got to tell you, I guessed everyone except
this one.
Just hang on. We're looking at it. And I was rather by myself. And then when I clicked on it, I'm like, oh, my God, because I think this person is really cute.
Yes, he is. But not in the bicentennial. He was having 1976 was a bad year for this kid.
I know. But we were off the air and you were laughing pretty heartily. And I said, what is so funny? And you showed me this picture.
Right. It is our friend Mark Carmen from the WGN Sports Department. Now, I now play Mark in tennis from time to time.
And he's beaten you several times, I hear.
He beat me 3 times in a row, and then I beat him the last time. But now I'm going to have this picture turned into some sort of a T-shirt, and I'm going to wear this when I play him in tennis next time.
You will never lose to him again.
No.
He's going to take the ball and try and hit your chest. I mean, God love him. I have many dorky pictures.
I don't know what the score is. Do you? And I'll go, it's either 1976 or 1776. I'm not sure which.
It's very red, white, and blue.
He's wearing like an American flag that's been turned into a culotte. I don't know if people even did that.
He still wears that.
He still wears
that. Yeah, I've seen them in that.
If it works for Elvis, it works for Carm. Oh, my God. You got to go
it's
to
a
WGN
beautiful
Radio.
Photograph. Are you seeing it, Steve?
I wouldn't have gone, but because it's Carmen, I'm going to go look right now.
But I'm telling you, there is no way on earth like you'd guess who that is.
Never. Never. Because I've known him for 5 years. And I mean, there's been no trace at all for his weird love of the bicentennial. Not even once. And I've hummed like patriotic songs near him, and he hasn't reacted at all.
Oh, my God, I see it.
You see it?
Yeah.
Do you see what we mean?
I totally see little Mo Howard and a little the kid from...
Nicholas from Eight Is Enough, Adam Rich.
And yes. Pete Rose.
And Pete Rose.
Right.
Right.
And that could be a prison outfit, too.
I think he might have been in prison. Right.
I think that's the Maricopa County Jail prison outfit.
But he could not be more handsome now, I'm telling
right.
you.
Right. He blossomed.
Oh, my God.
As soon as the bicentennial was over, Mark found the way.
Go to WGNradio.com and check out the photo gallery because it's pretty adorable.
Yes.
It really is.
All right. We need to
we tease because we love. We
that's
love
right.
Carmen.
That we do. We'll take a quick break and then we'll talk to Ashley Escada from CNET. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill, it is a Tech Tuesday, and joining us on the line like she does every Tuesday is Ashley Escada from CNET.com. How are you, Ashley?
Good, and how are you two?
We're doing well today. Hey, I have a quick question just to start you out, and I just want to ask a question, and I want your advice on this. You break a screen on an iPhone, and say you carry insurance on your phone carrier. You pay like $30 a month for three phones, which isn't bad, but then when you break the screen, it's like $150 to get a new phone. So why can't you just go to some of these places that have popped up where they just replace the glass on the phone? I know it voids the warranty, but I mean, no one owns their phone anymore. You pay it. It's like you're renting it.
Yeah, I mean, you can do that. They use the same types of techniques. So you can totally do that. And if it's, you know, it depends on your deductible. It's just like sort of like having car insurance, right? So if something gets hit on your car and your deductible is higher than what it would actually just cost out of pocket to fix it, then maybe you just want to go out of pocket and fix it. The same type of thing.
Your homeowner's insurance doesn't cover this?
I wish.
Can I just tell you that's a
great
idea?
It should.
Not because, first of all, he was walking the dog when it happened.
Oh.
But I know that back in the day of the answering machines, which I have to admit I still have.
Yeah.
Don't even use the landline, but it's there if necessary, if needed. There was an electrical storm, and a surge went through the system and fried out my answering machine, and I just had renter's insurance at the time, and they covered it.
Yeah.
That's possible. I guess it would depend on what kind of insurance you have and what it actually covers. But I've never tried it, so I couldn't speak to that. But it's not a bad idea. It never hurts to ask.
Wow.
It never hurts to ask. Worst they can say is no, and then you would pay out of pocket anyway.
Right.
Bill's a genius.
I am a genius, I told you. Kobe Bryant is no longer an NBA star, but he's just made a big announcement as to his future, Ashley. What is Kobe Bryant going to be doing?
Well, he is going to continue something he's been doing for a while, but in a very official way. He is starting up a $100 million tech venture fund. He rang the opening bell at the stock market yesterday morning, and he is teaming up with an entrepreneur that he's worked with before to make investments, but this is an official, they're making it official. And they're going to name this fund Bryant Stibble. The entrepreneur he's working with, his name is Jeff Stibble, so very creative name. Just put two last names together.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to invest in technology, media, and data companies, which is pretty interesting. It's a really smart move for anybody, you know, like Kobe Bryant, who's retiring and, you know, you've got a little extra cash. Why not try to make that more money? So he's going to start getting into some technology investments, which he does have some already. They've invested previously in a video game maker named Scopely. They've invested in LegalZoom, if you're familiar with LegalZoom, where they have that online legal help where you can get forms and things. And then also a home juicing company. So they're on the lookout for interesting investments that they would potentially be making. So there's a new investment of venture company on the market, and it's run by Kobe Bryant, which is pretty awesome.
All right, so here's the question. Even though he was a wizard on the basketball court, is there any reason to believe he can parlay that into understanding the tech world with stocks?
It seems like he's been investing since, I want to say, around 2013 with this particular entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, obviously investing is a real hit and miss game. But it does seem like he really kind of considers what he's investing in before he actually just throws money at it. He seems to want to be a little more active in the process from what I've seen and read. But I don't know. I mean, time always tells with venture capitalism, and it's always really interesting to see sort of who comes out a winner and who doesn't. I mean, we've seen other, you know, not even just athletes, but people who have made a lot of money and then they retire, maybe from a startup, and then they've become venture capitalists, and maybe they invest in the next Uber, or maybe they invest in the next Twitter. And so this could be the case with Kobe Bryant. He could be the next great venture capitalist.
Does he need the money?
Of course not.
I don't think he does. It's just it's something to do, and you're kind of buying his celebrity name when you're buying into this, aren't you, Ashley, to some extent?
I would say a little bit. I mean, you don't technically think of investors in Uber as the people you're buying into. You think of it as the company you're kind of buying into if you use it. But on that same note, yes, he is very high profile. He's certainly a much more higher profile investor than most. So I'm sure that any company that he chooses to invest in would be something that people might actually gain interest in where there was none before, mm-hmm. Which is always sort of a consideration, an extra consideration that he and Jeff Stibble will have to make when they invest in companies. They'll have extra scrutiny, I'm sure, just because of the high profile investment if he chooses to make an investment in a company. So it'll be very interesting to see sort of how things shake out and how people respond to the companies that he ends up investing in. And I'm really curious to see if he ends up maybe having a focus in a specific type of technology, maybe sports technology, things that help athletes get better at playing, increase their performance. But maybe it'll just be like he's previously invested, and it will be all over the map. Maybe it'll be websites and, you know, products and all sorts of different things.
I like Kobe Bryant. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Apple in the news, too. There's a charity auction that's going on. Tell us a little about this.
This is I always love seeing these old Apple product auctions because they often reach ridiculous sums. And it looks like this one is going to be more of the same. There is a Charity Buzz website. It's a fundraising site. They are right now auctioning off an Apple One. And the Apple One. The very first computer that Apple ever made.
How big is it?
It's not terribly small. It's definitely not an iPhone. It's,
right.
If you remember the old, you know, Mac 2s, those are even small compared to some of the Apple 1. So the Apple 1, about 200 of them were made. And about 175 of those were sold. And about 70 are accounted for right now. So there's an auction happening, and the highest bid it stands right now at $500,000, and
wow.
They think that, and the site thinks that it will sell for $1 million. They think this is going to sell for $1 million. Back in 2014, another Apple One was auctioned off for $900,000, so it's not a completely unreasonable number that they have come up with. And this is apparently one of the earlier Apple Ones, which would have been handmade by Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs, which, of course, would increase its value because it would be kind of a prototype.
Is this the one that looks kind of like a typewriter meets a cash register?
A little bit. So it's so funny to look at them. It's the one that has kind of a, it does look like the one that's like a typewriter
meets a cash register.
Yeah. And then it says Apple in the back. That's one of the original Apple Ones. And Steve Wozniak himself talked about these earlier models, and he said this particular it's called the Celebration Apple One. And he said that no known printed circuit boards of this kind had ever been sold to the public. So this is sort of a kind of a rare find amongst Apple Ones, as rare as they already are. So it's pretty interesting. And there's some goodies. If you bid $1 million, you guys are going to pool your cash together and you want to bid. You get some extra stuff if you win the auction. You get a cassette interface board for running programs.
Nice.
You get a basic program cassette tape.
Yeah.
And two games. You get Star Trek and Blackjack.
Oh.
Blackjack.
That would be fun. Yeah. All right. $1 million seems easy, then.
And I also love, you get the original sales receipt or the sales receipt from the previous owner and all of the manuals and schematics, which is pretty fun. Honestly, though, I think for $1 million, I would want Steve Wozniak to come to my house.
Now, realistically, this should be in a museum, right? Isn't that where it would be best
I'm
suited?
I'm sure there is one, right?
There'd have
there
to
were 200
be.
Made.
Yeah, there are some that are already in museums that have been purchased, that have been or donated to different museums. And so these are really kind of, you know, I'm sure over time, many of these will end up probably just in museums or in high-end collectors' collections.
And so there are There are some Apple freaks that, you know, listen, I have an iPhone, I have an iPad, I just bought a MacBook Pro. I love them, but there are people that want the new stuff the minute it comes out. It would be very cool to have this, but not for $1 million.
Yeah, well, unless you're Kobe Bryant, right?
So right.
Then. Nicely tied in, Ashley. That's well played.
That's cheap. Then it's cheap. It's a drop in the bucket. What's $1 million?
Right. Ashley, thank you. We appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week. It's Ashley Escada. She's the senior editor over at CNET. Go to CNET.com, and everything you need is there. We'll take a quick break, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy with you on WGN, 312-981-7200. That's our phone line and our text line.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, Wendy. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well.
Hey, did you know that Kanye West has written a love poem to McDonald's?
I've thought about it for years, but never pulled the trigger on it.
Too late. It's been done. Kanye West beat you to the punch. It's all part of... Now, I had to ask Kevin what this means, because I thought I understood what this means, but Kevin had to fill me in on this. It's part of Frankie Ocean's new zine, Z-I-N-E. And I said to Kevin, I think that means magazine, doesn't it?
Like an online thing?
Yeah, I guess.
Kevin, would you like to explain it to Grandma and Grandpa?
What's a zine, Kevin?
Yeah, you got it right. And it's Frank Ocean. Not that it really matters.
Frank Ocean.
What did I say?
Frankie Ocean?
Frankie Ocean.
I call him Frankie Ocean, Wendy.
Any relation to Billy Ocean?
Yeah, they're... No. No, not related.
But yeah, it's just a web magazine.
That's it.
A zine or a
new zine. It takes too long to say magazine.
Well, it's not a magazine.
It's an online... It's an e-zine. Right? Isn't that what it is?
You sometimes surprise me with your hipness.
It's an e-zine.
You're very street.
I'm very street. Well, Kanye West, who's one of my homeboys, has written... That's also something
that
we say.
Funny.
We say that on the street, Wendy. He has written a poem about his love for McDonald's. He calls it The McDonald's Man. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, but it's great that he wrote a poem. Why doesn't he put it to music and it'll be a song?
That would be... Yeah, why wouldn't he? That would make perfect sense. He's a singer, isn't he? He's a rap artist.
Some would say.
Yeah. He's a big fan of himself, too.
Yes, he is.
He's a huge, huge fan. All right. I will do a reading of it for you, and you can decide whether or not it's worthy of making into a song.
All right.
All right. Again, this is called The McDonald's Man, and it is written by Kanye West. Now, I should warn you before I do it, there is a swear word in it, and I give him credit because there's only one swear word in it. I would think Kanye West, if he's writing a poem like this, probably would just litter it with swear words, but only once does he swear.
Only one McSwear.
One McSwear. So when I get to that word, can I point at you and you just make a noise?
Like to beep it?
Yeah.
I kind of like when you use other words to...
All right. It's the S word.
Okay.
So, excrement?
I guess.
Yeah? Is there a better one? What should I say?
Stick with that.
All right. Crap? I can say that. Should I say that?
Bill!
I'm sorry.
Shame
I apologize
on
for
you.
My language, kids who are not in school yet. Sorry, I lost my filter. All right, here it is. It's McDonald's Man, written by the great Kanye West. I say that, not meaning it. McDonald's man, McDonald's man. The French fries had a plan. The French fries had a plan. The salad bar and the ketchup made a band. Cause the French fries had a plan. The French fries had a plan. McDonald's man, McDonald's. I know them French fries had a plan. I know them French fries had a plan. The cheeseburger and the shakes formed a band to overthrow the French fry plan. I always knew them French fries were evil, man, smelling all good and, you know.
Excrement?
Yeah. I don't trust no food that smells that good, man. I don't trust it. I can't. McDonald's man, McDonald's man. McDonald's, damn.
Oh, now see, now I like what he did there.
It's still going, though. There's more. There's a little bit more. Them French fries look good, though. I knew the Diet Coke was jealous of the fries. I knew the Diet Coke was jealous of the fries. Even the McRib was jealous of the fries. I could see it through his artificial meat eyes. And he only be there some of the time. Everybody was jealous of them French fries, except for that one special guy, that smooth apple pie. And then I guess you would drop the mic, I guess.
All right. First of all, I thought this was an ode to McDonald's that he loved them. I gather that his temptation are the unbelievably great McDonald's French fries.
He mentions them a lot.
But he said the artificial meat eyes, that's not nice because it's not artificial meat. It's supposed to be 100% pure beef. So he's kind of slamming them. The McRib, though, I guess.
I think it's known with the McRib that some of it is just processed.
Okay.
So I think
I never saw eyes on my McRib.
There are, by right, if you order a McRib and you see eyes on them, you should take it back to the counter, return it. Don't eat that McRib if there are eyes on your McRib. All right. Now, we know that this was written by Kanye West, but if somebody sent you this in the mail,
you'd
be afraid. Wouldn't you be afraid if somebody sent you something and said, hey, I'm just spilling my guts about my thoughts toward McDonald's. Here they are. What advice would you give that person? Get out of the business.
Yeah, to work on your poem.
Right. You've just had a horrible nightmare. Just sit down in a lawn chair for 90 minutes and you'll feel better.
What's the movie that's out? Sausage Party or whatever?
Sausage Fest?
Is that what it's called?
I think so. Is it Sausage Party?
Maybe it might be Sausage Party. All right. I think that's what inspired this.
Oh, maybe. It's possible. It's possible.
There's so much more you can do with a song about McDonald's.
Well, it's a poem. It's not a song. I thought, and you were right, you brought this up immediately. If you're going to take the time to write something, and he probably spent 45 or 50 seconds on this, he could have spent an extra minute and turned it into a song, certainly.
You know what? By the end of the show, I'm going to write a poem about McDonald's.
All right.
I bet
I bet yours is better than this. And you're not Kanye West.
No, I could be.
You could be.
All right. Well, that's good to know. Anyone can write a poem.
But because it's him, like now this is getting a lot of attention, this poem. And McDonald's is thrilled about it because they get a mention from Kanye West because apparently nobody had heard of McDonald's prior to Kanye West writing this poem. Now it's kind of in the collective. America knows about McDonald's finally.
And I know it's in the news, and we reported it on this show earlier this week about these little iFit type bands that McDonald's was creating.
Part of their Happy Meal.
Yeah, did they give in to pressure of people saying you're not a healthy place? You can make healthy choices there. You can get salads, you can get the dressing on the side,
right.
You can get the grilled chicken as opposed to the fried chicken.
Yeah.
But you go there because you know what to expect and have known what to expect for all these years. They shouldn't change a darn thing. They should never give in to pressure.
Well, except that they had gotten it from so many people for so long that it's just that it was synonymous with a bad meal for your kids that they said, well, you know, we can just keep getting jabbed or we can do something.
But that's a bad attempt, a plastic exercise band that, you know, you can't
breathe. Just giving kids rashes.
Yeah, well, a kid walks around and runs around and sweats, and it's just a plastic band.
I know.
It's going to get hot under there, and you're going to get a rash.
Right.
I mean, just do what you do, which is make the fries, McDonald's man.
Now you're going.
You got the plan. Ain't no trouble when you eat a McDouble.
Oh, look at you. You're like a modern-day Rod McEwen. That was beautiful.
Thank you very much.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, if I told you that a man in surgery had a knife removed from his stomach, you would feel badly about that.
Yes, I would.
But if I told you a man had 40 knives removed from his stomach, you would say, well, something's horribly wrong here, right?
Yeah, something's horribly wrong here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Doctors in northern India have surgically removed 40 knives from the stomach of a man who had swallowed them over the past 2 months.
Well, he's a knife swallower.
Yes. You should have yelled spoiler alert because that was the end of the story. He is a knife swallower. The 42-year-old man is recovering in a hospital in Punjab state. He put the jab in Punjab. After undergoing surgery on Friday, in which doctors removed 40 knives, some of them folded, some of them with exposed blades, some of them as long as 7 inches.
I thought a sword, well, I guess that's the difference between a sword swallower. I thought you just swallow it and you pull it out.
Right. You don't physically, I hate to blow the cover off the sword swallowing industry because you and I have had our battles with them in the past. But when you are a sword swallower, you're not actually swallowing the sword. You're putting it down and you've trained your stomach to make way for
and
the blade.
And your esophagus,
and
obviously.
Your esophagus, sure. To make way for the blade. You don't physically, but this guy took it literally and was swallowing knives, 40 of them.
Does it fill you up?
No, you want a side dish. You want to get rice or a potato.
little starch with your knife.
Right, right. To the moms out there listening, planning meals, please make sure if you're giving the family knives, a little side dish. Some vegetables are always nice. Don't just give them the knives. Dr. Jitinder Malhotra, who assisted during the five-hour operation, said the man, who works as a police constable, was apparently suffering from a psychiatric disorder and is now being counseled.
I know there are people that have this psychiatric disorder where they eat metal.
I've seen that on TV.
Yeah, or mud.
Yeah.
Because they're, I know this sounds ridiculous, but they're lacking iron, so that's what they do, is they search for iron and they eat things.
There was a lady I saw on one of the shows where she kept eating paper. Like, she would, every morning she'd go out and get the morning paper and read it, and then when she was done reading it, she'd eat it.
Read it and eat it.
Read it and eat it was the paper slogan.
But now, think how great that would be, because there are other people who have disorders. I'm right on the borderline of hoarding. And
right.
What do people hoard? I don't, but most hoarders, you see tons and tons
magazines
of newspapers.
Magazines and newspapers, right.
So this, if you read it and eat it, she's...
One problem solves another.
Room with the woman who's hoarding.
Right. That would be her Craigslist ad. Malhotra, of course I'm talking about Dr. Jitinder Malhotra, said that he had never heard of a case of a person swallowing knives. In my 20-year career, and in all the medical literature that we checked... that wasn't eaten by that woman who eats paper. There has never been a case quite like this one where a person has swallowed not one but 40 knives,
jeez,
says Malhotra.
40.
40. You wouldn't think you'd have the capacity.
No, your stomach's not that big.
No. No.
Although that did say some were folded.
Even then, even if, let's say, 38 of them were folded, I don't think I could. I couldn't fit that many in my stomach. The man told doctors that he could not explain his urge to swallow knives. He told us that he would swallow the knives along with a glass of water, Malhotra said. He had no explanation for why he did it. I'm guessing the knife part, not the water part.
Yeah, because it would rust the knives.
Right, right.
That's not a good combo.
He said it is just an urge, but it's not just an urge. There's something's not right if you got a hankering for the knives.
That's what I mean, an iron deficiency or something.
I guess, but take a Zest Tab. I would recommend a Zest Tab. Is that for iron deficiency? I think it is, isn't
no,
it? No,
for iron poor blood.
Oh,
what
that's
was
for
that?
Carter's liver, little liver pills? That's what I would prescribe if I was this man's doctor. I'd say take some Carter's little liver pills.
I don't think it was little liver.
I can't say it. It's too hard to say. The man who has not been identified, I identified him, it's the guy who keeps eating knives. That's who the guy is, had come to the hospital 2 weeks ago complaining of a severe pain in his abdomen. Now, I'm not Dr. House Wendy, but I think I can solve this one.
Was it a sharp pain?
Or
a stabbing pain?
That's not funny. Oh, it is funny. In an endoscopy, we saw a big mass in his abdominal area, Malhotra said, by way of phone. We initially thought that it was a tumor or some cancerous growth, except that it was shaped like knives. Wouldn't that have been an indicator that it was not a tumor, that it was...
A knife?
A knife, yeah. But it was like nothing that the doctors had ever seen before. If I was this doctor, Dr. Jitinder Malhotra, I would have as my ringtone, when this guy called me, I would have Cuts Like a Knife by Bryan Adams, so I would know it was him. I go, I wonder who that is. Oh, I know who that is.
Do patients usually call their doctor's cell phones?
I would make an exception for this guy. I would go, this guy needs my home number. He can call me 24 hours a day.
Mac the knife.
Right.
We could go on all day,
that's
Bill.
Funny. A team of two surgeons, just two, two critical care physicians.
Jeez, yeah, because if you move it the wrong way, you're going to cut everything up.
Oh, yeah, that's true, isn't it? And an anesthesiologist conducted the surgery, during which they initially removed 28 knives.
Jeez.
But further investigation revealed that there were 12 more. It's like those ads on TV, those Ginsu ads, where if you order a certain amount of knives, they throw in extra
Wait,
knives.
There's more?
Right. That's what the doctor said. That's what Dr. Mulcher said.
Wait, there's
more.
Wait,
there's more. And he found 12 more knives. Now how much would you pay? Right. We need to take a break. We got news next and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. Thank you so much, Kim. We have a repeated guest. We like having her back in the studio. Let me just do a little brief background. Last year, woman shot and killed 75th and Stewart in the Englewood neighborhood. That's when Tamar Manassa went to work. Tamar Manassa in the studio with us. Tamar, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning, everybody.
Slightly tired, though, let's be honest.
I am. I'm a little
it's been
bit
a
exhausted.
Grueling summer for you.
It has been grueling. Sure. It's an everyday job, yeah. Every day in the summer. So, yeah, it is kind of taking its toll on me.
Well, let's backtrack a little bit. Last year, a woman shot and killed 75th and Stewart in Englewood, and that kind of set you off, and that's when Mothers Against Senseless Killings, or MASC,
mm-hmm.
began.
Mm-hmm.
You said, we got to do something about this neighborhood.
Yeah. Something had to be done. Something, and it just wasn't just that neighborhood in that corner. It's a microcosm of the entire city, of the country, of everything that's going on that block. It was almost like the trifecta. There had been a woman murdered, a kid murdered, and a man murdered. And if women, men, and children are all being murdered on the same block, we got to do something about that. And now what it was when we first went there, 75th and Stewart is probably one of the safest corners in the city of Chicago now.
No shootings in the last year.
Not even a fist fight.
Look at that.
Nothing happens there. Nothing.
This is because of you.
Nothing. It's because of the people in the neighborhood. It's because of people. You show them better, they do better. If you, it's available. If you can actually, you have options. You can do different things now. You're going to choose to do the different things. If you can choose life, you're going to choose life. And that's what we see.
Now, when the school year is going on, there are parents that are out there that keep safe passage.
Mm-hmm.
But during the summertime, when school gets out, that's when things might go a little awry. So this is when you started this mom patrol thing?
Yeah.
So you're out there all summer.
Every day.
No wonder you're wiped out and not feeling well right now.
Yes. No wonder I do not look like a supermodel today.
You still do.
It's toll. But I mean, it's almost like, you know, when you get out there, you can be really, really tired and you really beat and you know, and you get out there and the kids start showing up. You don't even have time to think about how tired you are.
Yeah.
Because you get all of this energy from all of these little people and from so many different moms and dads and just people who are concerned in general, who come to the block every day and who just say, you know, I came to see this. I came to bring a box of hot dogs and some hot dog buns or some hamburgers. I just came to see this. I want to see how you do this. I want to see what this looks like. So I get a lot of energy. I get by with a little help from my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
But talk about just the chemical makeup of what that area looks like now as opposed to what it looked like a little over a year ago. It's almost unrecognizable and just people just being out there and being a community, right?
Definitely. The thing that I've noticed that's most striking to me is that the neighborhood, for the most part, still looks the same, but none of the people behave the same. So it's almost like the two don't even fit anymore. It's weird when you look at it because people absolutely, they are ready for something better. And now it's like now we're looking into buying the vacant lot across the street from where we are because we're going to build the world's best play lot next year where we can have a barbecue every day in a play lot where kids can play safely and happily and it's clean and it's nice. But it's going to be, we want it to be the best thing outside of Maggie Daly Park. We want it to be something beautiful in Englewood.
Yeah.
We want it to be something that people can be proud of because that's what they're ready for. They're ready for something that they can be proud of because they're proud of who they have become. And I'm proud of who they have become.
Sure, of course.
There's a video, and it's Natalie Moore who mm-hmm. put this, interviewed you on from WBEZ.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a video that just shows you in your sweet little pink t-shirt, Moms on Patrol. And this neighborhood, Bill and I just watched it. There, it's just like family members. It's just a big, huge community where everybody's getting along.
It's a family reunion every
single day. That's what it looks like.
Every day it's a family reunion.
All summer long.
Every single day, all summer long, it's a family reunion every day. Every day. And it's kind of like sometimes, just like with your family, there are those family members, those limbs you want to just lop off the tree. There are, you know, it's a lot of nuts on everybody's tree.
Right.
So, I mean, there's some sprinkled in here and there, but I mean, like, not really. You kind of deal with them the way you deal with the crazy uncle at Thanksgiving. That's, you know, you take them, you hug them, you feed them and send them on their way and everything's good. But the kids are out there playing. We might do some karaoke. We're going to have a good time every day. That's what we do.
Explain this. Obviously, the gangs have not been eradicated. The gangs still exist in the area. So what kind of an understanding do you have with the gangs where they're kind of behaving themselves?
I think I'm in a gang. I think I'm the head of the gang for good.
Is that it? Oh, yeah.
That's what we are, the biggest gang for good in this city.
But,
yeah.
But has there been opposition from the gangs who are like, hey, this was our territory and you've made it difficult to survive?
The only gang opposition we've had is like the city.
Isn't that something?
At the end of this video, it says, you know, in a year's time, 75th and Stewart in Englewood, not one shooting, no fighting.
No, nothing.
It's people are taking pride in their neighborhood and in their community. It's completely turned around in 1 year's time. And then I see at the very end of the video, it's like, and there's a building owner who wants you guys to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. Like, I don't get it. Like, I really don't understand that. And that kind of made me think about maybe there's a larger problem here, because we look at the city and we look at all of these murders and everything that's going on in all of these places. And, you know, the frequency they happen in different neighborhoods. And if this person who owns this huge building and most of it is Section 8, and you have this huge building and you can threaten people with eviction if they get involved in actually saving the lives of their children or making the community that they live in better. If you can threaten them with eviction, why would they get involved? Why?
Have you met the owner of this building?
I've never met Mr. Potter. I've never met him. I've never met him.
I don't understand what, and I'm sure you don't either, what's in it for him.
No,
if the neighborhood gets better, his
property
build
value would, I mean, yes. I think that it would appreciate, but he does not see it that way.
Is there an alderman in the area that you can reach out for help?
The alderman and I are working on our relationship right now.
Yeah.
I wish that it was better.
Yeah.
And I believe, once again, I think we may want the same thing for the community. It just doesn't look like that right now. And I believe that in order for the Sixth Ward to get better, that he and I do need to work together, whether he wants to or not. We absolutely must work together, because at this point, I have a commitment to the people of his ward, just like he has one.
Sure.
So he's going to do what he has to do to keep his commitment, but I'm going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So, and
did you self-fund all this food when you started out?
Absolutely.
You paid for everything.
Absolutely.
And now how are you getting money to pay for things?
Some people donate and people come and bring in food. And what I'm seeing so much now is so beautiful. People come down and they donate food, but they don't just drop it off and leave. They want to stay. They want to pull out their lawn chairs.
Yeah.
They want to sing along to the music on the radio. They want to help grill. They want to play with the kids. Like, they really want to be a part of the experience now.
Sure.
So it's, I mean, we get mothers from Morton Grove, from Buffalo Grove, from Joliet, from as far away as Manhattan, Illinois, from everywhere. Wow. And they just want to come and hang out and just like, hey, be moms. Like, I'm good at this. You know, I have kids who are going off to college. They're 18, 19. They hate me now. They think I'm not cool. And I have all this mommy energy pent up. I just want to bring it and put it somewhere, you know.
Yep.
And you're taking all that on 75th and Stewart. Yeah. We take it all.
Mm-hmm. But if this doesn't show people that caring about your neighborhood and caring about one another can really make a difference. I'm not saying this is going to change everything in all the neighborhoods of Chicago, but it certainly is a little social experiment that people are learning from. do you need more people to do it in various neighborhoods?
Couldn't it, though? But couldn't it change the whole thing? Couldn't it?
You would
yeah,
think.
Well, because
you would
it's hope. A people, catalyst. To-
exactly. Because the thing is, sometimes we can have as many as 20 visitors on 75th and Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need 20 volunteers on 75th and Stewart at one time. How about you just take that food and you go on your own block and you set up a barbecue grill and see mm-hmm. what happens?
Was it scary at first? Did you think you were going to get resistance? Did you think, you know, the gangs that we were talking about earlier, were you scared they were going to say, what are you doing here?
You know what? I don't think so. I think in the beginning, I think I was more afraid of the police would think, kind of. I was kind of more afraid of that because I didn't want to be... I didn't want the people to see me as the police, and I didn't want the police to see me as one of these quote unquote gangbangers or drug dealers or thugs. And then it's kind of like within like days that was done. It was done. They were people. I was one of the people, and I got to see everybody for who they really were and what they really do in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that I became one of the people. And it wasn't, it was, you know, it's all kind of things that could go through your head. Because this is unknown. No one's ever done anything. At that point, no one had ever done anything like this before. And so it was all kinds of stuff that I thought might, you know, go wrong. And, you know, the media for the most part thought I was nuts. And it was like, hey, we're going to come out and see who's going to get shot because somebody's going to get killed out here wearing a pink shirt on this corner.
It did seem like this was not going to fare well.
Yeah.
Outside looking in, it's like, she crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Something is wrong with her. She's definitely out for meds. So, I mean, but it was kind of like, you know, within days, it's like I just became my second home.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can totally show up on the corner, like in my pajamas if I wanted to. I wouldn't, though. And I don't recommend that for anyone else. But it's just that amount of comfort. It's my living room. It's my home. It's my people.
Yeah.
And so when I go there, I mean, like everybody knows. When they see me, just like with your mom, they'll look at me and say, she's not having a good day today. Like, stay out of her way. Like, you know, what kind of mood? Oh, wait, her hair's in a ponytail. Nope, not a good day. Like, it's,
but in fairness to you, you're out there all day, mm-hmm. every day,
yeah.
7 days a week.
Yeah.
You're out there
yeah.
keeping the community safe.
Yeah.
When you care about something, you take care of it.
You do. And they care about me, and they take, and I care about them, and I take care of them, but they care about me, and they take care of me too. There are days when I sit in my chair and I don't move because it's like, what do you need? Do you need some ice?
Yeah.
Do you need a soda? What? Are you hungry?
Yeah.
It looks like you need to eat. No, leave her alone. Like, they really do care about me. It's all about the love. You give love, you get love. That's how it works.
Tamara Manassa is our guest. Visit the website, getbehindthemask.org. We'll take a quick break and then wrap this up in just a little bit. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's 720. It's WGN Radio, and we are awaiting President Barack Obama's speech. He's going to be, I don't know if he is in Louisiana.
Well,
I think he's landing there.
He just landed. Apparently, Air Force One just landed about 6 minutes ago, so it could be a while, I think, before we hear his speech. I'm not sure if he's just coming down off the plane and is going to speak, or we've also been hearing that he's going to speak with families first, so we'll keep you posted.
All right.
Thank you
Thanks,
so much,
Kim.
In the meantime, we have Tamara Manassa. I'll get your name right one of these days. Tamara Manassa. You live in Bronzeville, but you grew up in Englewood, and you're giving back to the community. You've got Mothers Against Senseless Killings, Mask. You've been out there. You've turned things around in the last year. Congratulations on that, first and foremost.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I know that there was a little pushback. You had mentioned in the earlier segment that at first when you got out there, you were maybe a little afraid of what the police would think of you
mm-hmm.
going out there.
Mm-hmm.
Were you contributing to gang members by feeding
mm-hmm.
them and taking care of them? Well, that seemed to work itself out. Do police officers come by while you guys are out there? Because I feel this would be like a great community police building opportunity, basically, to get the two parts together.
Yeah, it would be, but they don't. They don't. And I mean, they should, and they could, and they're more than welcome to. I think that it would be a beautiful thing if we have a lot of little kids outside. Come outside and throw around the football with them, you know, play a little catch with them, feed them a hot dog when you're not on a call. it really helps kids to see police in a positive manner.
Why do you think that's not happening?
You know what? I couldn't tell you. I maybe they're afraid. Maybe it's this fear. Fear. They, you know, I think for the most part, the police, when you get paid to police people, there's not a whole lot of love there because it's a job.
Right.
And love is so much stronger than fear. It really is. And if you fear people, you don't get out of your car. You don't do stuff like that. It has to be about the love. It, at the end of the day, it has to be about the love. I've been on a corner for a year. Mm-hmm. This is the second year. Mm-hmm. I haven't been shot or shot at. I haven't been punched. I haven't been raped, robbed, or anything else because it's all about the love.
Yeah.
I don't have a bulletproof vest, mm-hmm. but nothing happens to me because I go there in love. It's all about the love. And if you let a little bit in, it's not such a bad thing. Great things can happen.
Sure, of course.
You mentioned the little kids and a police officer walking into one of these little family reunions mm-hmm. you have going on. Kids look up to cops. Kids haven't learned to be afraid, or kids don't know that there are occasionally some bad cops out there.
Yeah.
I'd say the majority of them are good police officers, but it just seems like a great opportunity. And with all this going on with people in your neighborhood not trusting the police officers, mm-hmm. do you have any advice for someone of color who gets pulled over? What do you tell? I mean, maybe you are going to have a bad cop, but you probably not. I really want to know. I'm a white girl. I would say you listen to the officer, and then if there's a problem, you bring something up.
I need to take my own advice, Whitney. I mean, like, it's almost honestly, like, there have been times when I felt like, just keep driving. Just keep driving till you get to the police station parking lot, and then make them pull
you over. Where there are people around.
Exactly. Like, it's really one of those things. Like, I really hate that we have trust issues because there are a lot of really good cops out here. Officer Kimberly Woods in the 7th District, she is wonderful. She does a lot for the community. But we never hear about people like her because we're so busy hearing about all of the ones that aren't so good.
Right.
And it's kind of like we got to get away from that boogeyman, monster under the bed kind of mentality with the police. And that's how I feel. Whenever the police are behind me, it freaks me out. And I mean, I haven't done anything wrong. I'm trying to actually help. Why should I feel like I've done something wrong? Why should I be afraid of you? So I really think that they need to take advantage of opportunities that Mask and 75th and Stewart presents, and try to some kind of way build a better relationship with the people in a place where it's totally laid back and casual. This is not like some, you know, sensitivity training at work. This isn't like undercover boss, like somebody's watching you do this. No, you're just out in the community.
Mm-hmm.
You're out in the community that you have to be in every day. It pays to know people. It pays for them to like you. It pays for you to like them, or to at least know them. It pays to have some sort of respect and not just fear.
Amen. Can't say anything. All I can say is things have to improve. They have to.
They do.
She is Tamara Manasseh, and you are behind the mask. You are Mothers Against Senseless Killings. GetBehindTheMask.org. Is that the right website?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
continued
Tamara.
Success.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Well,
I love both of you.
Oh, right back at you. Thanks for doing what you do. A quick break. We'll talk to Steve next. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. It's part two of our Tuesday show. You can reach us at 312-981-7200.
All right, I have a question about this whole Obama going to Louisiana thing.
Uh-huh.
What took him so long?
Oh, you're not the only one asking that question. Many other people are asking that as well.
I know. Everyone's been asking that.
He was on vacation, which...
I get, but then...
The debate is... it's your vacation, but when there's a big disaster like this, do you cut the vacation a little bit short? That's been the criticism the last couple of days.
How hard would it have been to take an Air Force One, go over there, assess the damage, say, you know, my prayers and thoughts are with you, and get back to your vacation?
I don't understand why that didn't happen. That seems to be a fairly easy move. You have full access to Air Force One day or night whenever you need it. So, yeah, take a few hours out. I'm a huge fan of his, but
me
I really
too.
Think
I've
in
never,
this...
before now, said anything even really bad about him. But this seems like something... he should have done.
Right.
Although I have a question too. Now it's not dependent on his approval to get help assistance money, is
it? No, I don't think so.
So he would just go there to offer his support.
Yeah, spend a little bit of time, spend a couple of hours, do what you do in a situation like that, which is walk around and have people point at the bad areas and go, yeah, that's awful.
This is really awful.
This is terrible. It is. It's horrendous. So I'm very surprised, and I've heard people say, I'm not the first person to say this, that if this wasn't so late in his term, you probably would have seen that. But at this point...
He's still president.
He is still... I know. I'm very confused as to why he wouldn't have taken a little bit of time off and gone and done this prior
and
to
of
today.
Course, Donald Trump went, and that, you know, gives him
that
bragging
fueled
rights.
It up a little bit. Yeah. Right. So I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if Steve is ready in the newsroom yet. Steve, can you hear us? Are you there? No? All right.
He can hear us. He just doesn't
choose not to.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, this is a criticism that we've heard the last couple of days, is that that's part of the job, is to, if part of the United States is in some dire straits, and they are in Louisiana, show up, look around, and be more presidential. I'm very confused as to why that didn't happen. I know it was his vacation, but really, if you were on vacation and something major happened and they called you and said, hey, we probably need you in. Come on in and talk about
this. And we've got a plane that will take you there.
Right.
And then you can go back on your vacation. Does it look bad then if he goes and then goes back on his vacation?
I don't think so. Do you think so? I don't think so.
All right, Dave. You seem to know more than we do. How are you?
No, I don't know any more than you do, Wendy.
Oh.
Because you guys have access to one of the best news agencies in the world. But
yeah, but he's on break now.
Well, tell Steve to take a shorter lunch. You've got important things to do.
All right.
Well, what do you have for us, Dave?
Seriously, the governor of Louisiana several times came out with a statement that he wanted the president there, but he didn't want him there for security reasons, because several times now it's been said that when the president goes, they have to shut down roads, shut down the airport, clear the airspace, yada, yada, yada.
And they already had issues shutting things down.
Yes, they did. So he would have taken more security and rescue from what was really needed. So he agreed to it, apparently, and just said, okay, fine. Here's the money you need. Here's the people to help you now, and I'll see you next week. So it's next week, and here he is. And people always lose sight of the fact that the man is the leader of the free world. You don't just drop in and say, oh, hi, how you doing? Here's a dozen donuts.
Yeah.
It takes a lot more than that.
There's a lot of orchestration that goes on behind the scenes.
Yes.
Sure.
Support, security. You know, you could take it back to the show West Wing, whenever the president then...
President Jed Bartlett.
They had to make sure they had so many blood units at the hospital. They had security. They had this. They had that. This just doesn't happen overnight. So if you figure all of that into the equation, you end up losing sight of the fact that there's 100,000 people who don't have anything.
Right.
If President Obama shows up, all of a sudden, now there's 500 or 600 security and rescue people that could be helping that 100,000 people that have to stop and watch over the president, which
yeah,
they
that makes
should,
sense.
Which is their job.
Right.
That's the way it should be handled. So he just said, I'm going to wait. Donald Trump said, no, I don't care. Here's a half a truckload of Play-Doh, and, you know, I'll see you later.
Yeah, what was
he
that?
Said on MSN, huh?
What was that? The Play-Doh.
That's what Donald Trump took down there.
Why?
You tell me.
Yeah, I don't have the answers for that. Dave,
I know. And you see, that's what was in the tape that they played of him with his rescue efforts. They said the other night on MSNBC that it was a grand total of him unloading the truck for about 49 seconds, because they played the whole tape, him and his vice president. And they were standing there, and they were taking boxes of Play-Doh off. At first, I thought it was food stuff, you know,
yeah,
cans of peaches or whatever it might have been. And then when we looked closer at the videotape, he was unloading Play-Doh and toys for the kids. What is that going to do?
Well, we have a complete story on that. Dave, we got to run, but thank you very much for that information.
Thanks, Dave.
And
hey, thanks for talking to me. I appreciate it. Love you guys. Talk to you later.
You're very
nice.
Thank
you so much. I have the whole Play-Doh story.
All right.
And then the governor of Louisiana pretty much
John
said,
Bel Edwards,
do not come right now, President Obama. We'll need you later.
Oh,
so
right.
If that's the case, then...
Yeah. There really, I mean, when you stop and think about it, there is very little. I know it's a question of tact for the president to appear at these things, but realistically, there's not that much that can be done once the event has happened. You know,
you just show your support.
Right. You come and you look around.
It's more a ceremonial kind of thing.
It is.
Let's take a quick break, and people want to talk about this. 312-981-7200. It's Bill. It's Wendy at 720 WGN. It's Bill and Wendy. We had a couple of questions as to why President Barack Obama did not go down to check out the flooding in Louisiana.
Yeah.
The governor there had told him, we don't need you right now. Don't. We need all the resources to work on the flooding. And Joe, you have a comment on this?
Well, yes, Dave and I evidently listen to or watch the same TV programs because I was calling to say the same thing. But my just addition to that would be that it was the responsible thing for him to do, to go later since the governor had requested that. And I wish there was more knowledge about that rather than criticism of him.
I got to be honest with you, and I really cannot stand politics, but in this day and age, it needs to be discussed at some point. I did not know that. Bill, you didn't know why he didn't go.
No, I didn't know specifically that
right.
the governor asked him to
so
hold off.
So it should have been publicized a little more because he did get...
It should have been, but I will tell you, I listen to both of you every single day, and there are times when you talk about things that I know things about only because I watch MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it might, and I think Steve does, because I think a lot of the times the things that he has, that he's able to contribute, is from information that comes from that TV network.
No, every thought I have is original.
Oh, how about that?
Not really.
Do you mean Steve Cochran or Bertrand?
Steve Bertrand.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, he is an original thinker. Says that right on his bumper sticker.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, I love when he jumps in and gives you the information that you're struggling for.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was having lunch, though, so we didn't have that information.
Right, exactly. So
thank you so much, Joe. You can jump in, too, when we're struggling, because that should be like every 20 minutes.
Yeah, just stay on hold.
Really.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks,
we appreciate it. And the whole Donald Trump Play-Doh, that I did see. I almost thought it was a joke. If you go to Snopes.com, which is what we like to do,
mm-hmm.
to either corroborate something or prove it wrong, Donald Trump was criticized for donating Play-Doh to flood victims in need of food and water. But that wasn't the only item among the donations. The claim is Donald Trump donated Play-Doh brand modeling clay to Louisiana flood victims. True or false, it's kind of a mixture.
Yeah.
What's true is Donald Trump did donate Play-Doh brand modeling clay to Louisiana flood victims. What's false is Play-Doh was not the only item that he donated.
Oh. I can't wait to hear the rest.
On August 19th, yeah, go ahead.
I want to thank Donald Trump for sending the Play-Doh. I know that means we'll be getting Lincoln logs fairly soon and maybe some super elastic bubble plastic.
Very good, Obama.
Thanks.
On August 19th of this year, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump traveled to Louisiana to survey property damaged by recent floodwaters. While Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards warned Trump that this visit should not be turned into a campaign photo op,
mm-hmm.
the news media managed to snap at least one photograph of Trump unloading a box of Play-Doh from a truck at the Church International in Saint-Amant. The picture was widely spread on social media, gave many the impression that Trump had donated nothing but Play-Doh to help those who had lost their homes to the floods in Louisiana. Even he knows. Come on.
Right.
I'm so sorry. It's looking bad. Here's some Play-Doh. Go fiddle around with it.
It'll be fine.
The GOP nominee has not yet issued a press release detailing what items he donated nor how those donations were funded. But although Donald Trump did donate Play-Doh to flood victims in Louisiana, this was not the only donation to those in need, as a video of Trump helping to unload a truck clearly shows that he donated much more than Play-Doh.
I saw the word click-clacks written on a box. Could that be it?
God, those were fun. That would take my mind off the flooding.
Sure.
Play-Doh, diapers, baby formula, various toys, cleaning supplies, and socks are shown in this video that he was helping to unload the truck.
All right. And again, the unloading was, as the cameras were shooting, right. He was unloading, and then when the cameras were done, so was the unloading. But that's how politics is. It's a photo opportunity. I know they said they were trying to determine whether or not this would be part of a campaign photo op. Everything between now and the election is going to be just that. Everything.
Absolutely. And one kind of ironic thing that happened in the floods, there was this pastor that had said in the past he believes that natural disasters are sent by God to punish gay people.
Oh, great.
His house flooded.
Oh, it did. All right.
How do you explain that then?
Did you see the picture of the casket just kind of floating down a street? I don't know. Have you ever been to New Orleans or to Louisiana at all?
No.
Okay.
But I've seen pictures of floating caskets a lot of times when there are floods there.
The cemeteries there are above ground in that you're not buried underground. You're buried up above ground.
Like in a mausoleum?
Yeah, except there's no mausoleum really.
So what is it? Suspended?
It's the weirdest thing. They're
on a the casket's on like a platform?
They're up on a platform, yeah. They're not underground. They don't bury the dead in most of Louisiana. And there's some parts, I guess, that there are. But
I think that's because it's so low.
Yeah.
And below, swampy.
Yeah. So what happens in a case like this where you do get a flood is that those caskets just become part of the seascape. You know, they just float away. And it's just as eerie as can be to see that. I mean, even when you see the cemeteries, we're so not accustomed to seeing
a casket there unless it's somebody being buried that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I'm not going there.
No.
That's kind of freaky.
It is very.
Not even to see them floating, but just they're just like if you go into a cemetery, they're just a bunch of caskets
they're
out there?
Above ground. Yeah. It's really.
Well, they're not caskets. They're buried above ground, but they're in
like
stone,
a vault?
Right? Or a vault, right, Bill?
In most but not all cases. Like there were some that I saw that they're not totally out in the open. There's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's almost like scaffolding almost with some sort of a tarp over it. It's weird to see.
Those are fresh ones.
No. Those are.
Really?
Yeah. Those are existing. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I guess if it's.
But the way the soil is there because of the water plane, they can't dig down. Like the 6 foot thing, you're in water already, you know?
I did not know that.
They put him 6 feet over.
6 feet over is what they say there.
I like how Steve Burchant jumps in with the funny
He just
stuff.
Did. He just did. All right, we need to take a break.
You know, when you're struggling for information.
Yeah, or struggling for the punchline.
Right.
That's very helpful.
Steve to the rescue. A quick break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Lepp, it's Wendy Snyder, it's WGN Radio, 720 AM, special friend Craig Gass in the studio. Would
what?
You guys like to talk on the air instead of off the air?
You're our special friend, we just decided.
I was actually getting really deep into comedy with Bill. We were talking about...
I know, but we got to bring it on the air.
All right,
fine, let's do it.
Right.
I'm excited to be here, and I don't know why it's taken me so long to get back to Chicago.
Really?
But
why has it? Is there a reason?
Probably because of an ex.
Oh, is that what it is?
It really?
Does your ex-wife live here or ex-girlfriend?
No, it was an ex-girlfriend that she could be listening. I don't, you know.
All right,
So
we have a surprise for you.
Yeah.
Can we bring her out?
I was just watching Maury in the other room, and I'm
right.
like, how is this getting me prepared to come on the radio
watching
these pregnancy tests?
Now you know.
Yeah, but it's been a long time, so I just have to explain to your audience who I am, so...
We can help. You're a stand-up comic. You're an actor.
That's a good
You've
start.
Got some new things in the works, which we'll discuss.
Sure.
You've been here a lot. You have not been here in a long time. The last time I saw you was on another radio station, and you told me how great the Long John Silver's chicken planks were.
Oh, my
were.
God.
Big
I
fan.
Love Long John Silver's.
Yeah.
You know what? I got offered when I got offered a job for Family Guy. I do voices on Family Guy and American Dad. The casting director, Linda Lamontagne, called me up. She discovered me on YouTube, and she said, Craig, my name's Linda. I'm the casting director for Family Guy, American Dad, and at the time, The Cleveland Show. And I discovered these videos of you, and I played them for Seth MacFarlane over the phone. And I said, you got to hear this guy I just discovered on YouTube of you doing all these impressions. And I just wanted to know, we'd like to offer you a job. Are you available? I was in a Long John Silver's when she called me. I went, get the hush puppies. Get the hush puppies. I'm available. Sure. And she said, I said yes to everything she said. She said, can you be in LA by this date? Yes. Are you available to do this? Yes. And I agreed everything she said, and I just hung up the phone, and I went, oh, my God. And then the day before I flew to L.A., I'm hanging out with comedian buddies of mine in New York. And I go, dude, I just got a job doing voices on Family Guy. And they're like, oh, my God, how much are they paying you? And I went, oh, my God, I have no idea. I never even asked. So I called Linda, and I said, Linda, hey, it's Craig Gass. I'm sorry, this is really embarrassing. And she said, are you okay for tomorrow? And I said, no, I'm there. I got my plane ticket, and I'm going to be there. But again, this is very embarrassing. I never asked you, how much am I getting paid tomorrow? And she went, hang on. And she gets out some papers, and I hear her go, Craig Gass. Craig, you're getting scale plus 10.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so I'm scale Plus 10. She goes, yeah. And I go, okay. So I'm scale plus 10. She goes, yeah. Do you have any questions? I said, yeah. What's scale plus 10? I don't know what we're talking. I'm trying to pretend like I know what I'm talking about here. And she had to explain to me, scale is like the union minimum.
The going rate
And that's an hourly rate.
Right. And it's $780 plus 10%.
For your agent.
For your agent. Yeah. So in other words, they do you a solid by saying we're going to add money so nothing comes out of your check.
So you get the full paycheck.
Yeah, but I didn't have an agent. So I got to keep $858.
Nice. Said,
hey, you got the plus 10.
Nice. I got the plus 10. And then when I showed up, that's where I tend to screw things up because I get excited. and my recording session, I walk in and I've been lucky. I've been really lucky that every show I've been on has been a huge show. I've got to play like crazy characters on really memorable characters. Sex and the City, King of Queens.
Right.
I did something disgusting on Sex and the City.
Yes, you did.
And Family Guy, I'm a fan. I know everything about, I know exactly who Seth MacFarlane is.
Yeah.
So when I walk in, it's me and Seth, and I go, hey, Seth, I'm super excited. And we record, the whole session lasts 5 minutes. He kept doing one line as Peter Griffin, where he kept saying, this is crazier than when Al Pacino was a slumlord laundromat tenant. And they cut to me as Al Pacino, surrounded by a bunch of broken down washers and dryers, going, you're out of order. And you're out of order. And you're all out of order. And I did that 3 times. And Seth MacFarlane is working the board. And he goes, all right.
Got it.
I think we're good. But I'm so nervous because I think we're going to be friends now.
Oh,
because
sure.
We're working together.
Why wouldn't you?
And I said, hey, so you want to hang out? And he goes, hey, what do you mean hang out? And I go, I don't know, you want to grab a coffee or something? And he goes, I got to work.
Oh,
and I said,
no.
Oh, okay. Do you want me to leave? And he goes, yeah, get the hell out of here.
Oh,
and I go,
no.
I'm sorry. Let me get my papers.
That's
and
it.
And I walked out. I didn't hear from them. For 6 months, they never called me back. And then Linda started calling me and saying, hey, Craig, can you do this voice? And every time she called, I said, yes, absolutely. I can do that. And every time I've been in now to record for American Dad or Family Guy, Seth is never around.
Oh, convenient.
It's always a guy named Mike Henry, who does the voice of Cleveland and the creepy old guy. And every time I see Mike, I go, hey, Mike, Seth around? And every time I see him, he goes, don't worry about Seth. We'll get you out of here real quick. We'll get you out of here
good.
Really quick. And
that's
that
what you
says
want to hear.
Everything.
Do you know what's encouraging about that, though, is how many people put stuff on YouTube thinking, I'm just throwing it out there. Nothing's going to come of this.
Mm-hmm.
You got a really plum job out of just sending out a tape on YouTube.
Well, I didn't put anything on YouTube. It's other people put stuff of me on YouTube.
Yeah.
I never put anything myself on YouTube until recently. Like in the last, actually, it was getting the phone call from Family Guy. I thought, well, I should put stuff that I'm really proud of on. So I started putting my own content on YouTube. But I've always had that ability to do voices. It was a party trick. And I really just did it for drugs. I mean, I was a
Did
teenager.
You really? You're not kidding.
Yeah, I was, as a kid growing up, people would give me drugs if I would, like, hey, do some, you know, do your impression of whatever. And I would do it for drugs. And then I became a cocaine addict, and I had to, like, get rid of the problem. And then I did so much coke that I became an amazing impressionist. And it was because of my desire to get more coke.
Right. You wanted to keep, you're the monkey with the cocaine. They'll just keep
and
doing
the cocaine,
it. Yeah, you'll do voices.
And I, but they got worse and worse. Like, you know, the Sam Kinison would get like, yeah, this is a little shit. It's like, oh, jeez, oh. Yeah, it was like, it would be like so quick, it'd be so fast. And so I started, it got a little out of control. But I always, it was always easy to do impressions. Yeah. And then I just found that, like, oh, people really like it when I do this. But it was easy for me because of how I grew up, because my family, everyone in my family is deaf, my entire family.
Both your parents.
My mom and dad and my sister are all completely deaf. So growing up in a deaf family, I couldn't learn how to talk. From my own family, I learned how to talk by copying all the voices I heard on TV.
Oh, sure.
And I never got an accent from the Bronx, which is where I grew up.
Yeah.
And everyone in the Bronx has a really thick, very distinct, like Tracy Morgan. Everybody in the Bronx talk like this, whether you black or white, male or female. That's crazy. That's crazy. Hey, this is the voice of your next door neighbor, and I'm a Vietnamese girl. That's crazy. Hey, this is the voice of your mailman, and I'm transitioning. Come get your mail, baby. Yeah.
Isn't he the easiest interview ever?
Yeah, very, very easy, Craig. But doesn't it, I mean, part of the ugly irony of this is that we're all seeking approval from our parents at some point, and as good as your voices are, your mom and dad can't really hear them and respond.
Well,
right?
It's interesting because I would always do impressions for my family that didn't involve voices.
Oh.
All my impressions were body language.
More physical.
Yeah. And so when I think of doing an impression, I don't think of the voice. I always think of the person.
Yeah.
Like Adam Sandler is he's really shy, you know. And he gets nervous, and I know you do too. Jimmy do. You know, it's like I think of their body language, or Al Pacino.
Well, just tell me, does this man not look through your soul? Oh, yeah.
You know, Jay Moore told me a great story about working with Al Pacino on a movie in downtown L.A., and that they had wrapped a shoot, and they had 2 hours to kill. And Al Pacino, instead of taking a ride two blocks to his trailer, said, no, I'm gonna grab Jay and we're gonna go for a walk. And Jay said, I'm walking through downtown Los Angeles in the middle of the night with Al Pacino. And apparently when they walked away from everybody, and this doesn't make any sense to me, I just love the story, he said,
whoa, hold on, stop right there, look at that, that's the moon, baby. That's ours. And we're going to remember that forever.
I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
It's just, you enjoyed the moon, obviously.
It sounds like Al Pacino is in awe of anything.
Right.
Like he just wakes up in his house and goes,
whoa, hold on. Are you telling me that I'm at home right now? This palace is my home.
Like, yeah, I love that. So yeah, it's always fun for me. But my new favorite thing, since I worked on this new TV show with Dana Carvey and Steve Carell called First Impressions, is I like doing bad impressions.
Yeah.
They gave me a list of celebrities and they said, hey, do you mind working on some new voices? And I said, sure. And then I call them bad impressions, but it started out as giving a lot of effort, but my friends trying to help me.
Yeah, can we take
Don't
a
do
break?
Them yet.
Okay.
We'll
okay,
take
we're
a
gonna
quick
do...
break and then
By the way,
bad impressions.
I'm doing a couple of comedy shows, not in a comedy club.
Dirty Nellies.
I'm doing a show in a rock club, and it sounds like a strip club.
Yeah.
Dirty Nellies. Right. But apparently it's a big rock club out here. Dirty Nellies.
It's fun.
In Palatine.
Yeah.
And in Palatine. And they're also doing a street fair in Palatine, right in that neighborhood. So it's going to be a really festive weekend out there.
They used to do comedy fairly regularly. I had worked there years and years and
years
ago. At
Dirty Nellies?
Yeah, but it's all music now, until you're doing this show.
How cool is that?
You're
going
to like it. It's really cool. All right, stick around. More with Craig Gass. Oh, you're going to enjoy it. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN.
All right, it's Phil and Wendy. We are doing the easiest interview ever. You just say hello to Craig Gass, and he takes it over. He's going to be at Dirty Nelly's, two performances in Palatine this Saturday, 7 and 9, 181 Smith Street. It's a great place. You're also at like a little fair there, right? A fest?
They're doing a street fair out there. All the info is at getgass.com. Getgass with two S's .com. And you can also have, there's links on there to all the social media. For the last 3 days, I was broadcasting on Periscope, mm-hmm. and all the links are on my Twitter page. I've been broadcasting on stage with Pearl Jam.
I know, you're buds, huh?
Well, what I'll do is, I have a lot of friends in the music industry. The cocaine story should have told you I have a lot of friends in the music industry. And so whenever, I wanted to be in the music industry, I don't have any talent. So I became a comedian, and but I still maintained all these friendships from when I used to be a promoter when I was a kid, and I used to manage bands, and whenever I Periscope, instead of saying what you're looking at, I'll just say, like, I was in San Francisco for the Super Bowl, and I went to Metallica, a dress rehearsal, a sound check for Metallica, and I just posted it as local music. Hashtag not bad, and then people were checking and going, whoa, what the hell, like, and then same thing with Pearl Jam last night when they started singing someday we'll all go the way, mm-hmm. we'll go all the way the Cubs song. I posted it as baseball fan singing about baseball, and it was on stage at Wrigley Field, and so yeah, it's that's at Craig Gass Comedy, Craig Gass with two S's. But all the info for the shows in Palatine and everything and the social media is all at GetGass. GetGass.com, and that'll take you everywhere you want to go.
All right. You're touring with Kiss because your Gene Simmons is dead on.
I can't believe, first of all, there's a new update. The Kiss fans are mad at me because, that's kind of a long story, but it ended with it ended with me performing at an event with Kiss called the Kiss Cruise. Okay. And it's 3,000 Kiss fans from all over the world. They get on a cruise and Kiss performs a couple times. And if you love Kiss, it's really an amazing, you're interacting with Kiss fans from all over the world. And
playing shuffleboard with them. That would be fun.
It's actually a really neat thing because it's just like, hey, I love this too. And I'm from Argentina. I'm from Texas, whatever. So I met a girl on the cruise who is the cruise director. She's really peppy. She's really upbeat. She's the Julie McCoy of the cruise. And when she met me, she said, oh, my God, you're the comedian. You're the guy from the Family Guy. Oh, my God. Would you want to do a funny announcement on this ship? And I was like, oh, Jesus. Yes. does everyone hear it? Does everybody get to? And she goes, oh, it gets piped into every cabin. And I went, oh, my God. Yes. The next morning, everyone on the Kiss cruise woke up to, hey, guys, this is Paul Stanley. And this is Gene Simmons from Kiss. And we have a very important announcement. Do not panic, but we have a very important announcement. It seems that the Kiss cruise has just hit an iceberg.
Now, keep in mind, when I said we've hit an iceberg, we're in the middle of the frickin' Bahamas.
It's warm.
We're in the Bahamas.
Nice.
There's no part of you as an intelligent person would be like, oh my God, the ship's going down. We're in the Bahamas.
Do not panic because Kiss is going to take care of everybody, okay? We actually have three packages to get you off the ship. First, we have the Platinum Package, which is $5,000, which is we put you in a life raft and you have your own private photo taken with Kiss. Then we have the Diamond Package. Isn't that right, Paul?
That's right, the Diamond Package.
For $10,000, which is we throw you in the ocean with Tommy and Eric, and then Kiss floats by on a raft, and we do a private acoustic show in the ocean.
It was all stupid. Everything I was saying was stupid. Right. But apparently,
yeah,
two or three of the passengers on the ship actually ran to the employees and said, is Kiss really going to charge us to get off this boat? They actually thought that we had hit an iceberg.
Good,
and that
mission accomplished.
And that Kiss was going to stand the exits. And, yeah, it started out as this thing I started doing this Gene Simmons impression that got Gene's attention, and then he flew to New York to confront me live on the air about it. And
on Stern, right?
On Stern, yeah. I would say what I thought would be funny, every impression I would do on the show was like, okay, this guy's angle would be this. This guy's angle would be this. The Al Pacino was a really, literally infantile idea because Al Pacino had just had twins.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, how cool would it be to have one of the babies on the show that you could talk to? And a regular character was called Al Pacino's baby. It was stupid. So Gene Simmons was, every time we had a music guest in the studio, I would interrupt all the music guests as Gene Simmons and try to sell them crappy Kiss products.
Oh, good.
And yeah.
Very good.
And then the weird thing was, and we didn't know this at the time, the real Gene Simmons actually started getting hate mail because of all the awful things that I was saying on the radio. And it was just, it started out as fun. The guy who taught me how to do the Gene Simmons impression is a friend of mine in Boston named John Bianelli. John works for Aerosmith.
Mm-hmm.
And for the last 20 plus years, that's how we communicate with each other. When he picks up the phone, you know, I'll go,
hi, John, this is Gene Simmons from Kiss. And he'll go, what's up, Gene? Not much. I hope you don't mind. But Aerosmith's entire catalog is available for $29.95 at Kiss Online or whatever.
That's how we communicate with each other. Well, 10 years ago, Kiss and Aerosmith decided to do a tour together.
Uh-huh.
John's in the office at Vindaloo Music, which is Aerosmith's management. The phone rings. He picks up and he hears,
hi, John, this is Gene Simmons.
And there's a long pause and he hears, I'm sorry. And there's another long pause and he goes, Craig? And he hears,
no, it's not Craig Gass. It's Gene Simmons from Kiss.
Yes.
Listen, I need you to get a hold of this.
And he goes right into his thing. Wasn't even offended, which is why I got to give him credit.
All right, we. I wish we had more time.
Oh my God!
Honestly, this has gone quickly.
So quickly.
I know.
You know what? If you have room later this week, I got more stories for you. I had a bunch of stuff I was going to tell you guys about. But if you have room, we'll figure it out.
But for sure, at Dirty Nelly's.
Yes.
Two shows at Dirty Nelly's.
Yes.
And give the show times again and the dates.
7 p.m. and 9 p.m. at Dirty Nelly's out there in Palatine. And all the info, the links are at getgas.com. Get Gas with two S's.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, if there's time, well, today's Tuesday. If you have time later in the week, we'll do it. If not, we'll do it next time I come back. But man, that was effortless. How fun are you guys?
Listen, you are so easy. You say hello, Craig Gass, and you just talk.
Turn the mic on.
Yep. Pearl Jam shows, they were great.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. It was crazy.
And
it was
Tracy.
All stolen. You could tell when they got on stage. Everything they were doing was stolen from Kiss.
Sure. Well, of course it is. Craig, thank you. Nice to finally meet you.
And for anybody just joining the broadcast, if you missed any part of this interview, guess what? It's already available for $59.95 at KissOnline.com.
KissOnline.com.
Go to the website. Click on my codpiece. You'll see Bill's face will pop out of my codpiece.
Yikes.
And then pay for the amount.
Thank you, Craig.
Thank you.
Have
a good
stay.
All right. A quick break, then some news, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Earlier today, here on the show, in part one of our show, we were talking about a feature that everyone can see on WGNradio.com, and it's a great idea. Our own Stephanie Menendez had this idea. She told us that we should mention that it was her idea. So what it is because it's back to school time, you get a lot of the school pictures of your favorite WGN personalities. You get to see what they looked like when they went to second grade or third grade or fourth grade.
Now, there was a babysitter that we've met a lot of your babysitters on the air.
Yeah. Of the last three shows we've done, two of my former babysitters have just shown up.
One not on the air.
Right.
One on the
yesterday,
air.
Yesterday, Patty Leonard was in Chicago, so she came by to watch us. She was not on the air. And Judy DeFonso, who was my babysitter when I was a little boy.
You almost said little girl, didn't you?
No, I was going to say little kid, but I went with little boy. She was on at our remote on Friday in Bolingbrook.
And when Patty came by originally, she brought a little picture of you and your brother when you were younger, and I took a picture of it and sent it to you.
Yeah.
So we wanted to include that in the WGN Back to School.
Uh-huh.
I included one, I don't know, I'm like 2 or 3 years old. I wasn't really going to school.
Were you only 2 or 3 in that picture?
I don't really know how old I was. Older. Maybe 4.
You were driving a car.
No, I was not.
No?
But go to WGNradio.com, look at the gallery of Back to School, because you will see a picture of various hosts and some behind-the-scenes people, and you look at the baby picture of them, and you try and determine who it is.
Right. For instance, there's this little adorable little boy with all this kind of brownish hair, and you say to yourself, who is that? And it's our own Nick DiGilio. Then a couple of pages later, you look and you go, I know that girl. Who could that girl be? And it's Amy Guth.
Yeah, but there's one, and God, I'm so sorry, but there's another little blonde boy that I couldn't determine who it was.
Right.
And it's Steve Cochran's new producer, Mary Sandberg.
Right.
She had a very short page boy haircut.
Very short
Dutch
haircut.
Boy.
And then there's one girl I'm looking at. It was a picture of her when she was in Our Gang, and it's Judy Markey, back when she was with the Our Gang.
But then this one captured your eye and my eye separately, and I couldn't guess who it was.
Right.
And I was wondering all weekend, who is this? And then earlier today, you were looking at this while we were in a commercial break, and you were laughing hysterically, and I said, what is so funny?
All I knew was it was a little fella with a very unfortunate haircut who loved the bicentennial. That's all I could tell. And who could that person be?
He's on the line with us right now. He's our own bicentennial boy. He is Mark Carman.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, there's nothing, nothing wrong with this. It. We're all proud to be an American. Yep. Obviously not as proud as you.
Well, you know, Bill, Wendy, first of all, I appreciate the opportunity to join the program.
Sure.
Second of all, I thought that kid had a lot going on. He had a little bit of an earmuff haircut or hairdo. I don't even know if there was anything ever cut. And, it was a rough start to life for that young man in some societal ways. I mean, I think at that age, I still had not understood the concept of the shower, was still bathing solely.
Yeah.
And, I certainly was allowing myself to be dressed in whatever my parents thought appropriate. And
that's what I told Bill off the air. At this age, Mark, you could not pick your own clothes. You put whatever mom
told you. It was your mom or dad
or
maybe Uncle Sam that was picking your outfit for you.
Well, you're taking me back into, I think, Wendy, you'll enjoy this story. I think I was in roughly third grade, and it was maybe on a Wednesday, and some young girl who I probably had my first little crush on said something like, you smell, when's the last time you showered?
Oh no.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Right. And then I was Wednesday, and I thought to myself, well, it was Saturday, that's normal. So I said Saturday.
Quick thinking, Mark.
Right. Oh. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah.
And so she looked at me and was like, Saturday, that's gross. And so like I literally went home that day. I think it was the start of my transformation where I said, no more baths. I will be showering every day. And those clothes, they're never going to come back to haunt me unless, of course, Stephanie Menendez comes together with the WGN Kids deal. And then Bill and Wendy want to talk about it.
Hey, Mark, when do you think you might wrap up that transformation?
it's a lifelong learn and grow, Steve. That's what I'm into. So
can I just say that I defended you, and Bill, you can attest to
you
this.
You did defend Mark.
I said that you are such a fine-looking young man right
True.
Now that I can't believe that kid was you. That's what I did say. Would you please describe the haircut combination?
All right. The haircut, Mark, Wendy and I are trying to guess who it is. I didn't know that it was you. So Wendy said, well, that's obviously a picture of young Mo Howard from the Three Stooges. And I said, no, it's not. It's Nicholas, the youngest son from Eight is Enough. And then Wendy said, no, I think it's Cincinnati Reds Pete Rose. And I said, no, I think it's Al Michaels, sportscaster Al Michaels. We just, like, we couldn't figure out who it would be with that unfortunate haircut.
See, I look at that picture and I think that kid looks good, which is perhaps a problem.
You do look adorable. We know you. We love you. We wanted to tease you.
Yes.
But really, the red, white, and blue, that's what really caught our eye more than anything.
It must have been, was it 1976, Mark? Is that why?
Roughly, yes. that could be, it was probably an election year, yes. I think at that time, it might have been Well, we could go to 80, and like my if you remember that time period, my family was very into Anderson. They wanted
John Anderson,
a third party candidate. So sure. That might have been why.
All right.
They were trying to, you know, put me up on the billboard.
That was the year your hair was dyed white for the picture.
But, you know, Mark, I've said this before. In 1976, it's hard to imagine now all these years later, but there was such weird patriotism because of the bicentennial that on any given day, you'd walk around town and you'd see people dressed in all red, white, and blue for a year.
See, I was three, and perhaps not as much of a history buff as you are, but although I could tell you that, 76, what was that, Jimmy Connors' first ATP title. But,
I think so.
You know, yeah, right? So, I mean, you know, my dad did fight in World War II, so there is that. Maybe that was, you know, could have been a motivational factor. But, you know, my mom used to do, like, household sales. We had all these, like, used clothes running around. So it could have just been something that was cheap and free, and here you go, buddy.
Well, you made us. We saw the picture, and we both, Wendy and I, put our hands over our hearts, and we were proud to be Americans. And not barbers.
Well, that's good timing with everything that's going on, right?
So true. So true.
I'm looking at it now. It's still pretty adorable, Mark.
It
I'm
is
sorry.
Adorable.
Thank you, Wendy.
It
Thank
is.
You, Bill.
It is. And I would think you could show this. I know you're not married, but you could show this to a woman you'd meet and say, hey, if you're hoping to have kids, they could
don't do that,
they
Mark.
Could look like this.
I'm warning you now. Just don't do that.
No.
Or you could say, look how far I've come in 30 years. Just imagine 30 more.
You know, I will say this. Mike Jacobson from the Steve Cochran Show looks exactly the same now
yes,
as he
does.
Did in that little picture.
Yes, he does.
So I don't know which is better or which is worse.
I'm going to side with myself on that one. Yep. I love Mike Jacobson.
Yep.
I do,
yep.
too.
Well,
we tease because we love, Mark.
Yep, that's the only reason. You sound good on the airwaves all the time, and you look good as well.
Thank you, Bill. I look forward to seeing you on the tennis court soon, sir.
All right.
Yeah, when are you guys playing next?
Anytime. I'm ready right now.
The last text I sent to Bill, Wendy, was that I've got my mojo back. I'm ready to go, and I haven't heard. So I think there's an intimidation factor right now, Bill's.
I am
Bill's
a little kind of, intimidated.
Yep, see? That's what I'm talking about.
But I told Wendy this earlier. I'm going to take that picture and have it made into a sweatshirt, and then you wear that when I play you.
That would be, I don't know if I could deal with that. That'd be too much.
All right.
I can't tell you how much I love listening to The Beat every weekend with
Doing
you and various
job.
Hosts. Last week, or was it 2 weeks ago, when you guys spent a lot of time on potato chips? That was fascinating.
The rotating host, that gives credit to Kevin Powell.
Yes.
He was big on the chip. So we went with the chip. I mean, potato chips, Jason Hammel, World Series. Did you know, by the way, the Cubs are charging their season ticket holders $50 to process their playoff tickets?
Oh, are they?
Is that not offensive?
It is a little, yeah. No, it is.
Wow. See what it's like to be on a winning team for once?
Mark, if the season ended today, who would be the MVP in the National League? Would it be Chris Bryant or would it be Anthony Rizzo?
It would be Chris Bryant, Bill, 100%, I think.
Yeah.
I think he's... you know, the new wave baseball stats and whatnot, it all adds up to being Chris Bryant. But they're both adorable, and I'm sure they both have great baby pictures. Slash,
the same colors, the red, white, and blue for the Cubs babies.
Yep.
Right. Brizzo, I think you combine them together and make them both the MVP.
That's a good idea.
And what has happened to my White Sox?
They're adorable too, Wendy.
on the field.
Yeah, right. They're a team like so many of us that just didn't get to where they wanted to this year in their life, but there's always next season. And, you know, you can just think about 2005 and Joe Creedy and A.J. Pierzynski and all that. You can just live in the Mark Burley era. And, I mean, Jose Quintana just got win number 10. That was like a big celebration on the South Side, his 10th win, which is kind of sad and pathetic, but that did happen.
Mark, earlier today, Drake LaRoche called us and made fun of your picture.
Stop it.
How about that?
That will be what this season will be remembered for.
I know.
Drake and Adam LaRoche. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we'll rebuild next year.
Yep.
Right. I actually think the White Sox will have a very busy offseason, so we'll see if Chris Sale and company are back next year. I'm guessing.
And Robin Ventura.
No.
No.
That won't be the case, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
It's the end of Rockin' Robin.
Yeah.
Which, but,
no, I mean that he, we'll see if he's still here.
He won't be.
Yeah, I know.
No, he's going to be working at the accountant firm of Ventura and Goldman, and he's going to do a great job there, and he'll bring that same enthusiasm that he brings to the dugout to his desk, and you could use him come tax season.
Oh, that'll be great. Well, Mark, thank you. We appreciate it. Thanks for having a great sense of humor about this.
Thanks, guys.
It's Mark Carmen, everybody.
Thanks, Mark.
From WGN Sports. All right, a quick break and then a lot more
show. I feel
a
little guilty.
Don't feel guilty.
We pushed it a little harder than I meant to. It is fun, though, because he's such a good sport.
I know. If you want to see the picture we're referring to, don't look directly at it, but it's at WGNradio.com. It's the photo gallery of all the personalities and what they look like when they went back to school. Back after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN. I didn't think there'd be a time in my lifetime where I saw two guys on the Cubs. The way it looks right now is Rizzo and Bryant will come in number one and number two in the most valuable player voting in the National League. We went decades without even one guy finishing first, and now they'll finish first and second, probably.
This is your year.
I think it is.
I'll sit back and let it happen. We'll be back at a later date.
I know. Everything will balance out. It'll be fine.
Have you noticed the cicadas are louder this year?
Yeah, I did. I did notice that. Yeah, they are.
I was recording them the other day.
Is it almost gone, Wendy?
No, I got to take it out to talk.
That's the biggest lozenge I think that's legal. I don't know how you can get it.
No, it isn't. It's a Jolly Rancher lemon. They're very good.
Lozenge.
Very good. People, DNA info.
Yeah.
Googled, are cicadas noisier this year?
They seem to be.
Yes, they are screaming in terror. Cicadas reproduce in massive numbers because they are super likely to get killed.
Oh.
The species only survives because their predators physically can't eat them all. They are so flipping loud.
Aren't they?
They're really bad flyers,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they have, it's no sonar, it's no nothing. They really just like completely dive bomb into your car while you're driving slowly. It's not like you're hitting them.
Yeah.
You can be sitting on the porch and they'll just fly into your head.
I think they land by crashing into things. I mean,
is that how they're landing?
I'm making it up, but they don't ever, it seems like they never have a destination. Like they always end up where they end up.
Nearly every morning when I leave for work, as I open the front door and go out onto the front, the stoop.
Oh, yeah, I learned what that was.
There's always two or three that have lost their lives just because they couldn't navigate around our front door. They just crash
really?
Right into it, and they're...
You see the carcasses?
They're done, yeah.
So when is our big year? Is it 2 or 3 years from now, or...?
It's still a ways away. Yeah, it's got to be like 2 or 3 years.
Is it 17 years? This is where it gets shady for me.
I don't know, but it was just the coolest summer when those things were coming out of the ground.
It was really disgusting. They ruined one of my trees because it was kind of a sapling at the time.
Yeah.
And they were actually, you could just look at a tree and you would see them crawling up on it and they were eating away at the bark.
Right.
So there was a tree that I didn't think was going to make it and it has since come back. But it was really gross. And I really love shrimp. But if you look at these locusts coming out of the ground.
They're like flying shrimp.
Well, underneath the brown
shell. That's my dream.
Underneath the brown shell is a shrimp, basically.
Well,
it's really disgusting.
Yeah.
That's why the horseradish spikes every 17 years around here.
But, like, all right, when I was a kid, I remember seeing them
all over on
whatever that 17th year was. They were everywhere.
Oh, my God. You'd ride your bike, you'd hear them get caught
in
your
spokes.
Crash
right in you. But I don't remember them on the years that weren't that 17th. I mean, we must have had them, but I don't remember ever seeing them.
But isn't there a 17 and a 9?
We have them every year. Where I live.
They are, yeah, by us too, but I don't remember them as a kid. I only remember them out on that 17th year.
There were no in between years.
Right.
So here's my theory, and this is based on nothing.
Yeah.
I think in ways it depends on where you live. So if you live in an area that's had a lot of housing development and a lot of the ground dug up and replaced.
Maybe.
There aren't as many.
That could be right.
My home was built, I think, in the 30s, and no one's touched the backyards for ever.
Yeah.
So they're kind of undisturbed back
there. Right, like an older neighborhood. I know we're in LaGrange, and the area where we're in, these houses are very old.
Yeah.
And we get them every year, but not... I remember as a kid, it was just that one year that they were everywhere.
They were a blitz. Yeah.
But here's something to make us all feel good. There are 17 and 13 year cicadas. They're broods. That's what they're called.
Yeah, broods.
And we were supposed to have the 17 year cicada this spring.
No.
That's what it says.
This upcoming spring. Not the one that just passed, but the one that'll be in 2017. Is that right?
According to this article, it was supposed to happen in the spring of 2016, which already happened, but it didn't. That's a lie.
Who are you reading there?
It's from a website called liesaboutcicadas.com.
No, it's Cicada Mania.
Well, what's the really massive one? Then that must be the... They
the
don't,
17 year, right?
I don't know.
You don't know?
We'll have to take a quick break and we'll figure this out after the news.
If they didn't show up, that's changing world history. Every 13 years forever, they've been... around.
That's
global
right.
warming. Is Although, what are we not supposed to say? We're not supposed to say global warming. You're supposed to say change in the environment or something?
Something like that. Something more politically correct.
I'll prepare a whole report on cicadas and we'll find out about it because if they came, we missed them.
Yeah. All right. We'll figure that out right after the news. Stay where you are. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
What is this?
John Cicada.
Oh, my God. The 17-year cicadas came this year to Ohio and West Virginia and slivers of Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Maryland. That's the bad news.
Yeah.
The good news is they're not coming to Chicago for quite some time.
What's with that?
2024 is when they'll be back.
So depending on the region of the United States you live in, you'll either be blitzed by them or you will not be. It's not all at one time. Like I always thought, they're all at one time all over the country, but that's not the case.
No. And according to the Chicago Tribune, the 17-year periodical cicadas last emerged in the spring of 2007, and they'll next return in 2024. So we have a little while to go.
Every 17 years.
Yeah, but then
like Duran Duran. They put out a hit about every 17 years right now.
Yes, they do.
I remember one year when I was a kid and still playing Little League, there was a summer that was so bad that at one of the fields we used to play at, the whole outfield was just covered in them.
I know.
And some of the kids on the team didn't want to play the outfield. We would play right field closed.
Here's the thing. They don't hurt you. They're not going to sting you. But there are so many of them that it really is like you're in a horror movie.
Right. And they're so, I mean, if there are cicadas listening, I apologize for saying this, but they're hideous. They look awful. They sound pretty, though.
Well, you know, it's funny. They only have one job above ground, and it's to make baby cicadas or cicadas.
Yeah. That's a cut off the new Yoko Ono album that just got released. She sounds great.
The sounds are somewhat reminiscent of chirps, rattles, or high-pitched screams. And when males gather in trees to form a chorus, the noise can exceed 100 decibels.
It is louder this summer. I don't know what it is, but we had dinner outside last night, and you could barely hear each other talk. All you heard was them.
Well, 100 decibels is equivalent to a car stereo playing at max volume.
Oh, wow. That is loud.
The song can be heard by females up to a mile away, and if she likes what she hears, she responds by flicking her wings.
Nature's mixtape.
The deafening roar of a chorus of cicadas is often compared to the sound of a heavy-duty power equipment, and confused females have been known to swarm around people using lawnmowers, leaf blowers, and other loud tools.
No. They're not very bright.
No, they're not. They're just out for one thing.
They only want the sex.
Let's get it on.
That's all they want.
They lay their eggs in tree branches after the female cicada has mated. It's time to lay her eggs. Mm-hmm. She uses a structure on her rear called an ovipositor.
Oh, yeah, she has an ovipositor. That's right.
You used to get those in the back of comic books, didn't
you? The ovipositor. Yeah. Yep.
and then she, with her...
feminine ways?
Well, with her ovipositor, she slices Y-shaped gashes on the tips of tree branches, and then females can lay up to several dozen eggs in a single branch.
Wow.
And as many as 400 eggs spread out over 40 to 50 sites.
Yeah.
They incubate for several weeks. The newly hatched cicada nymphs fall to the earth where they spend the next 17 years of their life. So the eggs are laid, the nymphs fall to the ground, and so when they come out of the ground, those are the nymphs coming to fruition in 17 years.
That's a long time for a nymph to wait.
Don't you think, Steve? I think it is. So they just lay dormant for 17 years? Yeah. They're just underground, just kind of waiting for 17 years?
Yeah, that's kind of a long puberty, isn't it?
Very patient. Very patient.
They're harmless. Cicadas are harmless, actually good for the environment. Their egg laying in the trees is a natural pruning that results in increased growth.
Yeah.
Their burrowing aerates the ground, and their decaying bodies add nutrients to the soil.
Oh.
So they're giving back.
I guess they are.
They're passing it forward.
I love finding their shells and just putting it on your shirt because they
stay. I do that too.
They stay forever. Really?
Yeah, I do.
No, I'm Bill. You have an issue with that?
Yeah, because they're they're just hideous, aren't they?
But they'll cling to you.
I know, but do you want something that hideous clinging to you? It looks like something from the Sci-Fi Channel to me.
I know, I love that.
But it's just a shell. You just put it up there just to go, hey, look what's on my shoulder. It's Bertrand, I'm all about that.
Like yesterday, it's a snakeskin, kind of.
It is like, yeah, I guess it is, kind of.
Amorous male cicadas attract mates by rapidly vibrating drum-like timbals on either side of their abdomen.
Those are timbals, are?
T-Y-M-B-A-L-S. Yeah. I don't know the difference between a cymbal and a timbal.
I don't know either. It's a timbal of our appreciation. I'm going to start saying that. That's my new phrase that pays.
So they have these little things on each side of their abdomen, so timbals. It's like they're getting a six-pack while they're producing the sound.
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
When millions of them are doing it at once, the din is deafening.
Can you tell? Does it show a picture of a male and a female? Do they look different in any way, or can you not tell the difference?
I could look up a picture. This is the boy cicada, and this is the girl.
But there are some parts of the animal kingdom where the males and the females, I mean, even though they look like the same species, they look really different.
Up until a few years ago, Bill, just the females wore lipstick, but anymore,
you can't tell now.
It is funny because you think about like the mallard ducks, the peacocks.
Yeah. The male's more
ornate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in human world,
the
women put makeup on because we want to look more ornate than the men.
Right. I think so. Yeah.
I think we should switch that and have men wear makeup, and we can just be the nice little brown peahens, as they're called.
I'll do that.
There are 15 groups or broods of cicadas that are on life cycles of either 13 or 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
They appear mostly in the eastern and central parts of the U.S. Last spring, it was a brood in parts of Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, and Iowa that had its little coming out party.
Yeah.
This particular brood, which hasn't appeared since 1999, will be seen in the eastern half of Ohio, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Maryland.
Oh, all right.
So we're clear till 2024. And this is what I don't get. It says don't call them locusts.
Yeah, Wendy. That's racist.
What?
I don't know.
Humans have been tracking cicada appearances for hundreds of years in the U.S. English colonists who thought they were experiencing biblical plagues, which I could see where you're thinking it.
I think that when I see them now, I think, oh, no, another biblical plague.
They started referring to them as locusts, a mischaracterization that has managed to stick around. Locusts are actually grasshoppers. One major difference is that cicadas don't swarm. The males just independently bumble from one place to another looking for sex, which is pretty much exactly what's going on in the human race.
Right. That's the one thing we have in common with the cicada. Is our bumbling way of finding sex. Don't call me a locust, by the way, Wendy. Don't. All right, we got to take a break, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, well, we don't have to worry about cicadas until 2024. That is the big brood.
But they're out there now.
They are out there now. Mark can attest to that. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Wendy. How are you? No, they're out in full force in Orland Park. I mean, they're all over this neighborhood.
Because they love to golf. That's why.
Is that the golf capital of the world?
Yes, it is.
There are shell casings everywhere in my pool.
Really?
Yes.
That's so gross.
And my dog likes to eat them.
Although that's good protein, I guess.
Yeah.
If I have to find
just to let you know, they are definitely out here.
All right. So Mark is calling in with his cicada alert in Orland Park. Do not call them locusts, Mark, okay?
Okay, I won't.
All right, good
stuff. They do not appreciate that at all. All right, do we have time? Unless there's text
on
this.
I haven't looked at the text. I'm too busy doing my report.
There's one other thing that we have not gotten to today, and this is a surprise to me. You know, in the prison system, Wendy, for years and years and years in the prison system, there was one thing and one thing alone that was used as barter, as trade. If you wanted something in a prison, you had to give them something. And you know what that thing is? What is it?
I don't know from experience.
But you've heard.
Well, I've seen it. Prisoner's Cell Block H.
Right. Or Oz.
Oz, big time.
Or Orange is the New Black.
I don't think they did it in Orange is the New Black. They ended up making their own, but they didn't. Because it smokes. It's cigarettes. But can you even smoke in prison? This is said the dumbest, you know, the dumbest question ever.
They might have changed it. Maybe you can't. Maybe for a while it was allowed, and now
yeah, because really, what else are you going to do? You can work out or smoke or both.
That's it. Yeah. All right. So forever, that has been your currency in prison: tobacco. If you had smokes on you, you ruled the roost. You could do whatever you wanted.
Well, I don't know about that, but
to some extent,
you could get something at the commissary. Maybe get a little thing of Tang.
Right. That's still available in prison, right?
So I don't think so.
So maybe it isn't. All right, but now the rules have been rewritten, Wendy. No longer is cigarettes the way of trade in prison. What do you think it is now? What is the thing that everybody craves? And if you have this, you can trade it for whatever you want almost in prison.
A shiv.
Let me see if that's on here. Nope. It's not a shiv.
Are we playing the match game?
It is not a shiv. Charles Nelson Reilly, what do you think it is?
Popcorn.
It is not popcorn. what a great prison that would be, though. Hey, what do you got for me? I got some Orville Redenbacher. What do you need?
You can gather around. It's movie night.
Yeah.
I got the popcorn. Should be popcorn. You don't.
No, you're right. It should be popcorn. It should be. It turns out it's ramen. It's
what?
Ramen noodles. That's what every. I guess it's a more health conscious prison now.
It
than
is
it used
not
to
health
be.
Conscious. That ramen
is ramen
noodles,
bad for you?
They claim that it doesn't digest in your system and it stays in your intestines, although it's very good.
But you could get like a big giant bowl of it for 40 cents, couldn't you, ramen? It's really inexpensive.
Where
isn't
do you
it?
Buy it? I mean, you'd get.
Ramen shanty. Just down the road a piece.
You
ramen
can go
shanty.
Get like a giant container of these square. Anything that is in a square form and hard.
Right.
I don't know if that's really good for you.
I know.
A lot of sodium, too.
Yeah, it would be
but
high.
Very tasty.
It would be high in sodium. Cost-cutting measures by private facilities have led to subpar food quality and fewer meals, making noodles a commodity that trades well above its value in prison.
I don't know if you got to this part. Are you up to date in Orange is the New Black?
I have 1.5 more episodes to go.
Well, do you recall where they were hoarding ramen noodles and taking the seasoning packet out of it and sprinkling it on their prison food?
I forgot about that. To give it more flavor.
Yeah, because it tasted like nothing.
I forgot about that.
So maybe they're not into the noodles. They just want
the
spice
the flavoring?
Packet. I have just thought of my entrepreneurial idea.
You'll open
Wendy's
up
Wendy's Spices.
Wendy's Spices in prisons. Gustavo Goose Alvarez, who spent more than a decade incarcerated, wrote a book on the popularity of ramen in prison. The book is called Prison Ramen, Recipes and Stories from Behind Bars.
That's a catchy name.
I bet they can't keep that on the shelves. I would go to, if I was near a Barnes & Noble right now, I would run in and get that immediately because they're going to have a very hard time keeping that book in stock.
You can make fantastic Asian salads where you don't even have to cook it. You just kind of crumble them and sprinkle them with mandarin oranges and such.
That's a good.
Little goat cheese.
I'm
going to teach prison cooking classes.
Is goat cheese easy to find in the prison system? I bet it is. I bet they have a surplus of goat cheese.
I don't know if they do. All right. Maria, is this for real? Your son's in prison now?
Yes, my son is in prison now. And he is serving the end of a 10-year term for robbery under the influence of drugs.
Oh, no.
He was convicted of 3 counts of robbery with a fake gun. And he's a very nice, intelligent man, but it's been very difficult. And
sure.
He will come out of this okay.
Yeah.
But coffee is the thing that they trade.
Coffee
the food
is?
He's been in there in over 9 years, and he hasn't had a fresh fruit or vegetable. The food is so subhuman that I can't even describe it. So ramen noodles are a staple.
Yeah, I bet.
It's closest thing to real food that they can get.
So was this part of the three strikes you're out kind of thing where he just did three things and then had to go to jail?
No, he was never in prison before. This was his first offense.
Hmm.
He was addicted to Vicodin.
Yeah.
And that kind of led to the fact that he went into Walgreens and with his finger in his pocket and demanded drugs. And, well, he was convicted for three things in DuPage County. He pled guilty to three offenses, and he was sentenced to 20 years, of which he'll serve 10. And he's almost done.
Oh, that's going to be a great day when he gets out.
It certainly will, and I look forward to getting him healthy again because he's had poor health care, poor nutrition.
Sure.
No rehabilitation whatsoever. I mean, something really has to be done about the prison system. I can't. If I were younger, I would be totally advocating for that. It's just horrible. Just horrible.
So sorry about this. This has got to be heartbreaking to know your son's in prison and not being rehabilitated at all. Good luck with his return.
Thank you. He has been rehabilitated because he's off drugs and he's alive, and that's the best part of
that
it.
That is the best part.
Oh, that is good. All right, so coffee is what they trade in there, not ramen.
Yes, and they haven't been able to smoke for, well, he's been in there 10 years, so about 2 years into it, so 8 years in the Illinois prison system.
That's what I thought.
They have not been allowed to smoke. No.
All right, well, so sorry about this. Hang in there, Maria, and thank you for sharing.
Thanks, Maria.
Thank you.
Coffee is traded, Wendy. So you're not going to the big house. You're going to the Maxwell house.
Good one, Bill.
We'll take a quick break. Ro and Ann are next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.